Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
Indefinite or even permanent. Those are words companies are using about their employees working from home. Because 3 months into this huge unplanned social experiment, working from home works. NPR's Uri Berliner reports.
Twitter and Facebook made headlines with announcements about permanent work from home. But the news from a 94-year-old company in the heartland, Columbus, Ohio, may have been even more significant. Nationwide Insurance is shutting 5 regional offices because remote work has gone so smoothly during the pandemic. And thousands of employees will permanently ditch their commutes for home offices. Nationwide CEO Kurt Walker says it's been a popular decision at the company.
Overwhelming hundreds of emails and cards and letters and phone calls. Thank you for doing this. So I think we got it right.
Right for employees, customers, the environment, and Walker says Nationwide's finances.
As a private company, we've elected not to share what the savings are, but they're significant.
Saving money, it's always an attractive proposition for businesses, especially these days, and that's likely to drive the shift to remote work. Kate Lister consults with companies on the future of work at Global Workplace Analytics.
Going into a recession and economic downturn, those CEOs are laying awake at night thinking of all those buildings that they're, heating. Productivity is continuing without being at the office and saying, wow, I think we could use for a change here.
Companies including investment banks Morgan Stanley and Barclays and food giant Mondelez all expect to use less real estate as more employees work from home. But remote work all the time isn't popular with either bosses or workers. Workplace consultant Lister has done a survey showing that the sweet spot for employees is splitting the work week between home and office. And that would suit Matthew Schultz just fine.
If I were to have it my way, I would probably work from home 3 days a week and go into the office too.
Schultz is a plumbing designer who lives in Fort Worth, Texas. Normally, he drives an hour each day to get to an office in Dallas. But these days, he pads over to a guest bedroom at home and fires up his computer.
I'm sitting here wearing shorts and a t-shirt, and I've got, my two cats just running around all through the house. It's kind of weird, but at the same time, it's more comfortable, and I feel like I'm a lot more relaxed here than I am in the office.
Schultz says he gets at least as much done from home as in the office, and that tracks Lister's survey showing 77% of workers say they're fully productive at home, and managers are largely satisfied with their work performance. Now, the caveats. More than half of working Americans can't do their jobs remotely at all. And before we get giddy thinking that work from home is a cure-all, it's worth listening to Judy Olson.
I've been studying distance work for about 30 years now.
Olson is a professor at the University of California, Irvine. She says there are significant downsides to remote work. Collaboration with colleagues often suffers. You can feel lonely and isolated.
The hardest thing for somebody to deal with long distance is silence.
And it's easy to feel like you've disappeared from the action, the casual chats, and the important decisions.
I mean, basically blind and invisible. So you have to take all kinds of extra effort to make sure that you coordinate well with the people that you're working with.
Oh, and one other thing. Olson says it's important to have a good chair if you're working from home. You don't want to throw out your back. Uri Berliner, NPR News.
Black brother of hell.
Big companies like Nike, Amazon, and Sephora have been expressing support for anti-racist activism with new ads and statements on social media. But many would like them to do something more concrete to show their support for black consumers, employees, and black-owned businesses. A Brooklyn-based retailer named Aurora James came up with an idea. It's a social media initiative called the 15% Pledge that challenges major retailers to pledge 15% of their shelf space to products made by black-owned companies. Sephora, which is owned by the luxury goods company LVMH, was the first major retailer to sign on to the pledge. And I'm joined now by Artemis Patrick, who's the head of merchandising at Sephora. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
And Aurora James, founder of Brother Vellies, who came up with the idea. Aurora James, welcome to you as well. Thanks for joining us.
Hi.
So let me start with you. I just want to read from your Instagram post. You wrote, "So many of your businesses are built on Black spending power. So many of your stores are set up in Black communities. So many of your sponsored posts are seen on Black feeds. This is the least you can do for us. We represent 15% of the population, and we need to represent 15% of your shelf space." Aurora, can I just ask, how did this come to you? Was this like a eureka moment, or how did you come to this? Or had you been thinking about this for a while?
No, I hadn't been thinking about it. What I was getting were a lot of emails and social media posts on my feed from these huge retailers that were like, "We stand with you. We're in solidarity." And while I was reading it and seeing it, I wasn't necessarily feeling it. So what I asked myself is, what would it actually take for these retailers to do for me to actually believe that they were standing with me as a Black woman and also as a Black founder? And that's when I thought about, you know, our population being almost 15% and saying like 15% of their purchasing power going to Black-owned businesses would feel like solidarity to me.
And you said, look, don't get me wrong. I'm going to go around and read your post. Don't get me wrong. I understand the complexities of this request. I am a businesswoman. I've sold millions of dollars of product over the years at a business I started with $3,500 at a flea market. So I'm telling you, we can get this figured out. Why would it be complex though, Aurora, if you don't mind my asking?
I mean, I think the thing is, when we actually started looking at the greater landscape of some of these huge retailers, like they were actually carrying very few Black-owned businesses. So in a lot of cases, going from like 1% representation to 15% representation nationally is an insane amount of work, right? But it's a necessary work. And that's the work I was asking for.
Artemis Patrick Sephora, as I mentioned, was the first major retailer to take the 15% pledge. Can you just tell us a little bit about what the conversation was like inside Sephora and how did you decide this was something you wanted to do?
So when Aurora called for Sephora to help with this pledge, we really recognized the opportunity to take meaningful action and to live out the commitments our company has actually made to support our Black employees, clients, and communities. And we really just wanted to be a leader in this movement going forward. And Aurora helped light that spark. So, you know, if you talk about what was going on behind the scenes, I had a wonderful, honest discussion with Aurora about what this would mean. And we really spoke about the best way to go about it, which is to ensure that we're not just rushing to meet a deadline, but laying the groundwork for long-term success for these brands, as well as meaningful change.
How many Black-owned brands are at Sephora now?
Currently, we have 7 out of 290. Mm-hmm. So we definitely could be doing better.
Can I just ask how significant African-Americans are, or Black people really all over the world are in fashion? I mean, Rihanna's Fenty brand is a brand that I think a lot of people would know that's at Sephora, which I understand has been wildly successful. Pat McGrath, who's out of London. Given how prominent African-American women are, or women of color, let's say, in the beauty space, it just seems strange mm-hmm. that they haven't been more prominent. Did this never come up before?
Certainly it has. And I think, you know, we did notice this. We agree with you. It's bizarre. So about 5 years ago, we started an Accelerate program, and it was dedicated to building up a community of female founders in specifically, because you wouldn't be surprised as to how many are also male-founded, which is fine. But again, when you think about the industry, it seemed a little off. And so we did actually hit our goal of over 50 founders by 2020 that we helped with coaching and distribution, financing, things like that. And it turned out that actually 15% were Black-owned founders. So we know it can happen. We just need to now really dig in and expand that infrastructure.
All right, so I'm going to put you on the spot and ask, have you gotten any backlash for this? The reason I ask is you'll remember when Nike posted an ad a year ago featuring Colin Kaepernick, who initiated the take a knee, you know, protest during the NFL. You know, there were people, you know, making a point of, you know, burning Nike shoes and, mm-hmm. you know, posting these things on social media. Some of the sort of conservative groups sort of reacted with fury. Some have tried to come into shareholder meetings and denounce these moves. Have you gotten any pushback from people who say this isn't your business?
You know, there's always going to be commentary on social. But, you know, I have to be honest, the majority has been extremely positive because, as I mentioned, you know, we're about self-expression. This is an industry that deserves to show the representation of the people actually buying the product.
Aurora, can you explain to people why this matters beyond the particular entrepreneurs whose businesses would get this boost?
Well, what we see time over time is that female founders and also people of color who are business owners put money back into their community when they make it. And so while this is direct money that's going to business owners, it's also money that's going to immediately channel back into communities. And when you empower business owners and allow them to spend money in ways that make sense, that's so much more sustainable to me than just a one-time donation.
Before we let you go, Artemis, I noted that an other brands that have taken the 15% pledge include Rent the Runway and We Wore What. And the beauty care company Dove has been known for some time for their sort of inclusive ad campaigns using different skin tones. And it does seem that the fashion and beauty companies seem to be kind of taking the lead here. Why do you think that is?
For me, it's especially important for our clients to be able to find brands made by people like them and to have access to products that meet their specific beauty needs. So, you know, while we of course believe that this same effort should be made by retailers across all categories, it feels right that the beauty and fashion industries are among the first to step up and make such changes.
I just also want to say one thing to piggyback off of what Artemis said. Yes, beauty and fashion industries are the first ones to step up, but I think it's also really important to note that these are industries that are predominantly led by women in seats of power. And when we had these conversations with Sephora, it was 9 women on a Zoom call. And it's largely women who are stepping up and realizing that all of these changes need to happen.
Artemis, do you think that's true?
Right on.
Has that been your experience too?
Yeah, absolutely.
Artemis Patrick is the Executive Vice President and Chief Merchandising Officer at Sephora. Aurora James owns the accessories label Brother Velly's. She's the creator of the 15% pledge, calling on brands to dedicate 15% of shelf space to products created by Black-owned companies. Thank you both so much for talking with us today.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
I'm a fry, you nigga, some chicken.
America's national reckoning with racial inequality has reached far beyond policing, into Hollywood, finance, sports, and also food. Bon Appetit's editor-in-chief Adam Rappaport resigned earlier this month over a resurfaced brown face photo and claims of systemic racism at the magazine. Last week, Quaker announced it will retire the Aunt Jemima brand. This conversation is digging into who gets credit and whose voice is heard in conversations about food. I spoke with Alex Abad-Santos about this. He is a senior correspondent for the news site Vox. Your headline is, "The food world is imploding over structural racism. The problems are much bigger than Bon Appetit." So we're obviously talking about broad issues, but I'd like to start with the personal. You write one line in the story about Filipino food, food that you grew up eating. What's your observation here?
Yeah, it was kind of weird growing up and being like, I'm eating this food and everyone tells me it stinks and it's gross. And it's like, but then I think around 5 or 6 years ago, they were like, Filipino food is the new trendy food. Everything's like amazing. And it's, you should try this.
And suddenly it's the, like, thing you were bullied for is cool.
Yeah. Like I forced my mom to pack me like a ham sandwich. And it was like the saddest ham sandwich that she's ever made. And she's like, are you sure you want this? I'm like, yeah, because I can't eat the food at school because I'm getting bullied for it.
So how does that personal experience from your youth fit more broadly into the marginalization that you're observing in the world of food writ large right now?
So I think what happens and what's been going on and why Bon Appetit was such a big deal is because it touched upon these bigger issues that have been brewing for a long time. It's not just a brown face photo. It was more about this bigger story of who's presenting food to people. What the food industry has been and restaurant industry has been reckoning and wrangling themselves over for the last few years is the appropriation of food. It's called, I guess like a catchy term would be Columbusing food or colonial or like food colonialism, which is
claiming
where
you discovered it when others were there all along.
Right.
So why does an Indian chef cooking the food of her own culture tend to get less mainstream attention and praise than a white chef who uses a lot of Indian ingredients in her recipes?
That's kind of reflective of the media and what the hiring has been in the media. Like, food media is predominantly white. Critics are predominantly white. And so an audience, whether explicitly or implicitly, tends to be white too. And so when editors are thinking about the decisions of like who gets featured for what or what kind of way stuff is presented, editors might think that it's unapproachable white readers might think like, oh, well, that's a little bit too far for me. But then when it's like through this lens of like a cool white girl presents it to you or a cool cutting edge chef presents it to you, who's
suddenly the foreign is accessible.
Yeah, it becomes much more accessible, much, much more popular.
We're talking about people in the public eye, magazine editors, people who appear on TV or write newspaper columns. Do you see the same thing happening in less public places like restaurant kitchens?
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the biggest examples is Rick Bayless, who has an empire of food, of Mexican food. And he's been inspired. Like, he's huge in Chicago. You can buy Frontera Grill salsas in the supermarket. But I think, like, reflexively, it's like, where is the Mexican chef who's cooking Mexican food? Where is his empire?
So if this reckoning leads to a productive result, what does that new world look like? I mean, like, what do you hope to see at the end of this journey?
I mean, I think one of the things that you're going to see more of is possibly more representation.
When the Mexican chef gets his empire of French restaurants, then we'll know.
Yes. I mean, I will be the first one in line.
Alex Abad Santos is a senior writer for Vox. Thank you for talking with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Y'all niggas, and you gonna be niggas forever, just like us. Niggas.
Racist and violent graffiti discovered at an Amazon warehouse in the Inland Empire. CBS 2's Rachel Kim shows us why some workers say the company isn't doing enough in response.
It was really disgusting.
This is the way Johnny Carina III describes the racist graffiti he says he found written and etched in his workplace restroom at the Amazon facility in Eastvale.
So basically they said, why are these N-words here? I wish they would go back to Africa. If I was an N-word, I'd kill myself.
Carina says it began in late November, and when he went to his supervisors, some of the graffiti was removed. But he tells us it happened again in December. Then earlier this month, Carina says things escalated.
Right after George Floyd happens, and you know, everything going on in the world, they tag white power, N-word, with a K behind it.
Carina tells us Amazon cleaned up the graffiti but did nothing to address the issue, so he filed a formal complaint. Meantime, another employee posted a picture of one of the racist comments on Twitter, tagging Amazon's CEO. That's when civil rights attorney Stephen King says Amazon fired his client, an employee named Donald Archie. King tells us Archie wasn't even the one who posted the tweet or took the picture.
But Donald Archie was one of the initiating individuals who decided that a picture should be taken, to preserve it, so that hopefully some sort of cultural sensitivity training or something could be done. But because he prompted that, he basically became the fall guy.
King is now representing Archie and Carina. Both employees believe an investigation into who was responsible for the graffiti was never initiated.
So we are going to be seeking damages, but most of all, what we want Amazon to address its policies. I mean, the timing is right, and Amazon should do the right thing. We want change. We want Black people to feel safe in the workplace.
We reached out to Amazon for comment, and they sent us this statement. Amazon has zero tolerance for any behavior deemed hateful, racist, or discriminatory. We take this matter seriously and are actively investigating the situation. Carina says while he continues to work at Amazon, he hopes to see a change in the culture there.
I want to see something that's going to be impactful to where people don't feel okay with their conscious or unconscious bias that they have towards Blacks in there right now.
Rachel Kim, CBS 2 News.
This is one of the stories we're following today. The Minnesota Department of Human Rights is expected to open an investigation into allegations from correctional officers in Ramsey County that they were discriminated against. The 8 officers, all of whom are people of color, say the jail superintendent segregated them from former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin when he was booked into the Ramsey County Jail. Chauvin is charged with second-degree murder and manslaughter in the killing of George Floyd in South Minneapolis last month. Reporter John Collins has been following this story. He joins me this morning. Thank you, John, for joining us. How are you doing?
I'm good, Kathy.
What do we know about the details of the allegations?
So 8 officers have filed charges of discrimination, and they're anonymous because they say they fear retribution from the sheriff's office. The guards say on May 29th that Derek Chauvin was booked into the jail, and they noticed that all employees of color, the guards, had been taken off the fifth floor where Chauvin was. And in one case, a guard already processing Chauvin was told someone else should do it. And these correctional officers inquired of their bosses, and they were told it was an order from the jail superintendent to limit interactions between Chauvin and correctional officers of color. And this upset the employees. It even made some of them question, according to the documents that were filed, whether they should be working for the jail anymore.
What is Ramsey County saying about the allegations?
The Ramsey County Sheriff's Office says they've conducted an internal investigation. And in that, the superintendent told them that he did make the order that employees of color not process Chauvin. But the superintendent, whose name is Steve Leiden, told investigators this wasn't any sort of special treatment for Chauvin, but that Leiden ordered it to protect employees of color at a time when many people are upset about the killing of George Floyd. And the guard's attorney, for her part, says she and her clients never heard that reasoning in their discussion with the sheriff's office previously. The first time they say they heard that was when the sheriff's office sent a statement to the media. Instead, the guards say they were told that employees of color were a, quote, liability in handling Chauvin, perhaps even opening the county up to a lawsuit if he was treated unfairly. And we should be clear, the guards say making assignment decisions based on race is not at all standard protocol at the jail. And they say they're professionals and deserve to be treated like that.
I understand the jail superintendent has been reassigned.
Yeah, the county confirms he's now on other duties, but they haven't offered many details. We do know Under Sheriff Bill Finney is now running the jail, and the sheriff's office does say that Sheriff Bob Fletcher, who you'll remember won re-election after being out of office for a number of years, is going to look at the issue and then decide whether he needs to take any other sort of actions.
You know, what else are we learning about what was going on in the jail as former Officer Chauvin was booked and processed?
I mean, one really interesting fact that came out in these charges was an allegation from one of the correctional officers that he saw on camera a white correctional officer, a lieutenant, get special access to Chauvin's cell. And the guard said they saw the lieutenant sit on Chauvin's bed and let Chauvin use their personal cell phone, which would violate policy. So there are still questions about whether Chauvin was treated like others would be when he was being held in jail.
Okay, so we have these eight officers in the Ramsey County Correctional System filing discrimination charges. What happens next?
So Minneapolis attorney Bonnie Smith is representing them. She says they want an apology, training for workers, the dismissal of the former superintendent, and compensation for trauma. But the process here is a little complex. The county's going to have the opportunity to respond to these charges, these allegations of discrimination. Then the State Department of Human Rights will investigate, and they'll decide whether there's substance to these discrimination claims. So that could be going on for a while. And meanwhile, former officer Derek Chauvin is awaiting his next appearance in Oak Park Heights prison.
All right. John Collins, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Context of white supremacy. Gus T. Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Friday, June 26th, 2020. So I have been told. Do you hear how they did? Dylann Roof killed some black people and they stopped and took him to get a hamburger. And, oh, wait a minute, I got confused. That's Officer Derek Chauvin. That's who they were talking about. I got confused. It was Dylann Roof. He shot up the church full of black people because they were doing the anniversary, right? 5 years. He shot up the whole church down in South Carolina, and they did the same thing then, didn't they? They took all, well, they didn't take them all down because we wouldn't be doing this now, but they took down a lot of Confederate statues and flags then. Anyway. But Dylann Roof, he shot up all those black people. And instead of throwing him on the ground and trying out all their newfangled choke holes and asphyxiation moves, they took him to get a sandwich. George Floyd's killer. Choke him. Kill him. All right, we arrest him. And we give an order. No Negro guards are to touch this white man. It's for your own protection. Protection from what? That would have been a good question. Protection from what? Is he going to chomp on us or bite us? Does he have the Rona? Protect us from what exactly? And then, not only no Negroes are going to be around you, no retribution. Don't think you're going to get any licks in and slip something in my food or anything like that. Then, allegation that he got to make phone calls? Contraband? Do what? I was going to play that segment for the compensatory call-in tomorrow. And I said, that's workplace racism. That's what they said. It wasn't presented as, you know, just standard Black Lives Matter. It was presented as, we are filing a report of discrimination in the workplace. Workplace racism. Isn't that disgraceful, though? I wouldn't have even found that, I don't think, because I didn't, like, there's a lot of things this week, a lot of things this month, that sort of report I probably would have missed because I found that when I was specifically looking for workplace racism reports for this week. And I said, my goodness, what in the world? Immediately I went to Dylann Roof, but I mean, wow, do they do that? Like when they, well, they said it was, and I've said that consistently, you should know the policy and procedure so that you can immediately recognize, maybe not 100% of the time, but I mean, wow, you should immediately catch a lot of times when things deviate from policy and procedure, standard operating protocol. Wait a minute, what do you mean? We don't do all the Negroes that we lock up, do they ever give out any orders that no white people are to be on the set? That would be every day, right? You'd have to have all black guards at some of the prisons, right? We lock up a lot of Negroes. Be mindful of policy and procedure so that you can immediately know, hey, this is not standard operating procedure. And that way, you don't even have to present it as a charge of racism. It's just, this is a grand deviation from the normal protocol. Why is that? And you can wait on an answer. And they should have one. And it shouldn't deviate. It shouldn't be they told you, oh, well, man, you Negro guards could be a liability. That was the word they used. And then when they go public, it's, oh, no, we did this to protect our guards of color. Yeah, we were looking out for their best. Well, wait a minute. What? Again, protect them from what? That's when you need just one journalist. Protect them from what? Yell out. Does he have the Rona? We'd like to know. Protect them from what exactly? Workplace racism. We'll have to pay attention to see how that goes. I would not ask for an apology either. They had that towards the end of the segment. Do not ask for apologies because white people can. I mean, wow, you talk about tacky. Woo! They can get all kinds of tacky with the apologies. You have no idea. Also thought it was important. Whew. Attempted counter-racist scientist Neely Fuller Jr. has said for years, white people do not get fired, they get transferred. The superintendent, I know this is a white man, the superintendent who made this decision, he didn't get terminated, he got reassigned. Whew, Neely Fuller Jr. All right. So the other things that we heard. Working from home. We had people who wrote in about that, saying that that might become kind of a permanent fixture. I know some of our listeners have been working from home. I've said that consistently. Not most, but we do have some Cavs listeners who have been working from home and have, you know, written in and given great code and that sort of thing, and have even talked about, hey, it's been a blast, loved it, not having to be around race soldiers, best thing in the world, enjoy it. And if you're in that group where this becomes a permanent fixture, bravo, eliminate that commute, save some gas money. If that company saves money, maybe they'll give you all a raise. Bravo. The only thing that I would say is, you know, with anything in the system of racism, white supremacy, I think we were talking about some aspect of the plantation, and race soldiers found a way of ruining everything. That's why we should have a sense of urgency about solving this problem. Man, whether it's being on those video conferences, and we've heard about the tackiness in the conferences and making comments and things and trying to spy what you got in your house and what neighborhood you live in and all the rest of it. Them spying Are they going to be asking if this is going to be permanent? Are we now going to have devices and things on your computer so that we can monitor and make sure that your productivity is up to par? That type, I mean, it's a lot of things to think about if this becomes permanent. That, yeah, this is probably not going to be as enjoyable as it would be if we didn't have a system of racism. If we had a system of justice, work from home, spectacular. Work, what do you say? Work to, or do 2 days or 3 days at home, 2 days in the office, that type, spectacular. Love it, love it. Or 4 days at home, 1 day in the office, love it, spectacular. System of racism always finds a way to... But if that is happening, if they are making that sort of adjustment and saying, yep, you know, or for some people, I think they said at least for the rest of this calendar year, they're going to be staying at home. If that sort of thing is happening, that might be a major adjustment to your code. If you go from being in the office, you know, 40 hours or whatever it is, 45 hours a week, and now you're going to be at home, you know, now you're in the office maybe 2 days a week or 1 day a week, and then you work from home the rest of the time. That's probably a major code shift. In terms of getting your work done, I think having a comfortable work position. I was telling our narrator, Mel, ergonomics, so that you can have good posture and you have a good place to sit if you're not accustomed to being at home where you're not just, you know, lounging and watching, you know, whatever's on Netflix, as opposed to you're there to do business, making sure you have a spot where you can have nice posture and all that so you can feel good, take care of your health as you get work done. Let's see. The report from Amazon, wow, white power, I mean, the tackiness, it just abounded in that report, the retaliation. I always encourage taking photographs of things that happen in the workplace. Think what happened in that incident. They reported that one of the victims allegedly took photographs of some of these racist incidents that happened at the Amazon warehouse and then posted them online. And tagged the owner or one of the higher-up white employees, and that prompted the retaliation firing. Not sure. I don't know if we've recommended, like, taking photographs and posting them. I think generally we've just said, like, taking those images and holding them for evidence. I think some people have said maybe going to the media, but that might work. I have seen some instances where that has been successful. I'm not sure. Generally, I would just say if you have video evidence, visual evidence, put it in your file that can be used for later. Might have some sort of retaliation or, yeah, I'm not familiar with someone who has done that method. I'm not really familiar with anyone who's used that method at all, to be truthful, personally. So I don't know, you know, successful, not successful. I really wouldn't have info on what to expect, but I can't say I'm not surprised that that led to more problems. And the goal is solving problems in the workplace without producing new problems. Let's see. The food racism segment I thought was important. As someone who many people have asked recently, and when I say many, like a dozen, it might be more, hey, Gus T, why don't you make a cookbook or some, you know, counter-racist food resources, you know, to help black people, help victims of racism improve their diet and eat a little bit better and so they won't have that extra weight, you know, victims of diabetes and all these other health complications. And I said, man, I don't know. It's got to be more qualified people. Generally speaking, the more qualified people are white people. Exactly what you heard in that segment. If you look online, really for anything, they were talking about so-called ethnic cuisines. Like, why is it that a white person is going to be more popular doing this than an Indian person? Or why is a white person going to be more popular teaching, you know, jerk chicken than a black person who's actually born in Jamaica? Why would that be? System of racism, white supremacy. So I see a benefit to having more black people. Not that there aren't already a lot of black people out there who are doing vegan cooking and all kinds of cooking. That's amazing. Dr. Lathan, she's been, you know, on the program. Tracy McWhorter, she's been on the program. So there are a number of folks who are already doing that. But that is a massive manifestation of white supremacy racism. And it's in, I was posting, I had a spectacular smoothie before we went live today. Lots of cherries, just wow, amazing. Using my Vitamix every day. But if you look online for like recipes, smoothie recipes, Vitamix recipes, it is going to be overwhelmingly white people. And then, you know, the books and things, white women specifically dominate the publishing industry. So they have a lot of say so in terms of what books and those type of things get published. And they also talked about the audience in terms of who's buying this material. So lots of layers. I would still encourage, it's why we need more folks to be doing that. I think that's important to be able to see black people who are preparing healthy, tasty foods that are delish, will support your body and immune system working efficiently. Very important. That's why I think Dr. Lathan, always love having her on the program, and other folks who offer helpful, practical information to improve our diets. Maybe Gus T needs to do more work in that area. More to come. Let's see. The other segment where they talked about making 15% of retail space available for black businesses. That's the type of thing that I would like to see. Like, white people could get that done. Like, when they talked about, you know, it's hard or it's work, like, white people put satellites in space, leave the planet. They are about solving problems. And I mean, chop, chop, let's get it done. Like, getting black products into stores, like, that is way small. I mean, we are literally, we are not talking rocket science. They could get that done. Roll out a little year plan, and they could brag about it. They could do that and totally clown and brag about it. In this age of apps and everything else, they could do it. And look at that. Negroes were struggling. We came in here and cleaned that. Woo! Let's see. Did I cover? I think I covered all the reports. Folks have thoughts on that. That segment about George Floyd, or not George Floyd's killer, and the racism at the prison. All areas of people activists. So many lessons just right there. And you get the callback to Dylann Roof, 5 years right on the button. Right on the button. We don't treat white killers the way we treat you coons. Please get him a hamburger and a cell phone. If you would like to write in, this broadcast is not for spectators. The number is 605-313-5164. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Number again, 605-313-5164. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Email address untiljustice@gmail.com. If you have concerns, you do not want to be identified, or if you're not able to dial in, if they're causing you difficulties, if you dial in 30 times and are obstructed for some curious reason, untiljustice@gmail.com, and we can read your commentary anonymously. If you have either suggestions or if you have your own situation and you would like constructive feedback. First person who wrote in, see if we can get these all in. Black female victim of racism. She writes, I work from home, so I will simply share my observations of being a contact tracer. Got one. Work from home. See, told you. Yeah, quite a few of the, well, not quite a few, but sizable number. My suspicions were pretty much confirmed. The vast majority of the black people I spoke to who either had COVID-19 or are suspected of having it came into contact with the virus at their jobs. Critically important, we do have a number of listeners who are working from home. We also have a substantial, and I would say the majority seems to be the so-called essential workers, the folks who were not able to remain in the house, hang out for a month or a few weeks, or have been hanging out indefinitely, they were not in that group. They have had to go out and be on the front line and soldier it and get some tacky applause in the morning, and maybe they stop the hazard or hero pay or whatever cliche name they put on it. That's pretty much what we have heard for the past 3 months. Lots of so-called essential workers who are at risk. Continuing. Nearly all were essential workers. Most had medical jobs, and others had jobs like sanitation and MTA operator or were teachers. The white people I have spoken to were traveling cases or cluster group cases. Now, I'll just pause right there. They talked about a lot of this started. It was white people who had been globe-trotting hither and yonder, going to Asia and Europe, Mardi Gras, drinking, debauchery, and all of this. And then the so-called clusters. Now, they've had a lot of reports saying that the people who are getting infected now are skewing younger because they are not social distancing, or they hadn't been anyway, and they are going out, going to bars and parties and all those things. Yeah, clusters, groups of people. And they said it's younger, and pretty much every time. I'm not going to say always. I know there are some non-white people victims who are also not taking it seriously. Some of them Cal's listeners. But I have seen a lot of photos of big groups of white people, and seen with my own peepers, big groups of white people not taking it serious, out hanging out in large groups, in very close contact, and doing the exact things that they say, oh yeah, that's going to spread the Rona. I have seen quite a bit of that. Continuing, most of the traveling cases came back from Europe and showed signs like coughing at the airport, which makes them a suspected case, but by the time we contact them, most report they don't have any symptoms. In regards to the clusters, they admit they attended, what did I say? Still a coon, I know, but I mean, I do try to be a little bit mindful, check the news, avoid the fake news if I can. Let's get it again. In regards to the cluster cases, they admit they attended parties and celebrations. What has it been to celebrate in 2020? Come on. I can't think of any point at this year where it's been, wow, we need to have a like Black History Month. Nothing. We had an 11-year anniversary, and I don't even remember saying much of a word about it. It has been horrible every day, every minute, every second. Celebrations. And actually admit some of their family members were very sick. I had a few say they are upset they aren't able to send their kids to camp, and went as far to call the governor of the state a monster. Just my observations. That's been 2020 right there, that email. That's been the whole year. It's hard to even make sense. Like, are you serious? They're calling to gripe. I want to send my child to camp. Some idiot has been saying for like, how long have you been on the air? 11 years? That system of racism, white supremacy, white culture, they do not care about children. That has been flagrantly on display throughout this whole sad ordeal. No coordinated response about the children. Where's Betsy DeVos at? Secretary of Education? You can't get a national coordinated plan about all this? She's grousing about sending them off to camp? Who is in? Whew, I don't have children, but if I did, that would not be high on my list. I have got to get little Gus Jr. Off to camp this summer. Maybe I have a daughter, Gina, we'll say. Got to get little Gina off to camp this summer. Really? Really? The number is 605-313-5164. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. The email, untiljustice@gmail.com. If any of you are excited to send your children off to camp this summer, you can please set Gus straight. Hey, I don't have, you know, offspring, so I might not know what I am talking about. One last thing before I get to listeners. This is not, I don't normally hear the word, but this is not like a segment for venting. Like, we are all about the science of attempting to counter racism. So looking, hopefully, to try to solve some problems and not just woe is me. Not saying that people normally do that, but just making sure that's our understanding of what this investment of our time and energy is about. Solving problems, neutralizing, exactly as it says in the title, neutralizing workplace racism. Just making sure we all had the same understanding of what we are here for. Star 6-1, if you have comments, observations, suggestions to share. Let's see folks who dialed in. See, while folks are getting their thoughts, observations together, that's odd. While folks are getting their thoughts and observations together, I'll make sure I get in one more email. Let's see. Oh, she got it up there. All righty. I think, did I miss the email last week? Dang. I missed an email from a black female listener last week. My apologies. I am a victim. I do try to keep up with the emails, but apparently we got an update, so I guess it all worked out in the end, so we got additional information. My bad. Thank you for writing in. So she writes in, my email got missed. Update. A few weeks ago, I warned against holding Zoom meetings outside. This week, I participated in a video meeting with a few colleagues. We were waiting for people to join, so there were a few minutes of small talk. My manager commented on the bird song we could hear in someone's background. It wasn't clear where it was coming from, as there were quite a few people on the call. Most of them were white, so I don't think anyone was in immediate risk of racist retribution for living above their station, as I'm sure he assumed the noise was coming from the home of another racist suspect. She did recommend not going outside for the Zoom meetings, and I think she and myself, even I think some other folks, have said repeatedly throughout all of it that this is one of the trade-offs, that, man, the nosiness of race soldiers is not going to stop just because you are no longer in the office. Now, no, they can't snoop through your desk anymore, or if you leave your wallet or briefcase or whatever it is in your workstation to go to the restroom or whatever, go to the cafeteria, so that they can rifle through that or anything else. No, they can't do those things anymore. But if we got to do these video conferences, oh man, we can screenshot and zoom and pixelate and isolate audio and try to get any kind of nook and detail and just that, like, immediately ascertain, oh wow, somebody's got a songbird. Interesting. They are very observant, especially when it comes to their Negroes. Next, we're continuing. And whilst race soldiers seeking to harass are physically restricted, digital platforms make effective alternative weapons. I received an email from the racist suspect female who kept touching me. Apparently, she noticed some information on the company website was incorrect. Although the information relates to my work, she is well aware that I am not responsible for updating the site. However, it would have been a problem if it was incorrect, so I checked it immediately, only to find it was correct. I emailed her back to inform her that the information was right and asked her to let me know what she was looking at so that I could double check. No response. After a few hours, I emailed and asked for her to send me a link to the web page with the incorrect information. She responded as follows. Okay, it is correct, but it is confusing. The fact that she delayed and the tone of the email was stroppy let me know that her intention was to antagonize me. Probably was. The Black Lives Matter movement and George Floyd, and wasting time, make sure I get that in, wasting time, they love that, wasting our time. The Black Lives Matter movement and George Floyd's death continue to provide racist suspects with welcome light relief during this period of social distancing. They have been clowning in full effect on the plantation. This has been the year of white clowning, like... And they have been creative with their activities, haven't they? Kente cloth and all. Although no one has taken a knee as yet, it's been an interesting period. Watching race soldiers shapeshift and refine up close has been fascinating and educational, but also extremely wearing indeed. I made a call to a non-white colleague earlier in the week. He did not know it was me when he answered the phone. His voice sounded worn down, which was out of character for this individual. I asked if everything was okay, black self-respect. He explained he was feeling traumatized by numerous conversations with race. Traumatized by numerous conversations with race soldiers who, out of the blue and unsolicited, claimed to be in solidarity with black people. Right on. One of them said that in the news clip. Right on. Right on. Solidarity with black. Apparently, a few have recalled incidents which they may have unwittingly, always ignorant, acted in a racist manner towards a black person, and they feel the need to confess to him. He is taking a few weeks holiday to get a break from the tackiness. Bravo. If you have that ability to get some time away, particularly if you're feeling drained, because sometimes we, as victims, we are conditioned to kind of be numb to our own abuse. So, you know, we could just be taking all that trauma and having to listen to them and their lies and nonsense and just absorbing all of that. And, you know, I'm just going to battle it through and just battle it through and just battle it through. And it takes a toll. It really does. It takes a toll on your health. It can end up where you don't have patience and then you go home and are upset with other people or don't even want to be around anybody. You just want to sit by yourself from all that or just lots of ways. It just can be really, really detrimental, even just upset, disrupting your sleep. Because we've heard from a lot of folks where you have these type of incidents happen. This is a Friday, correct? And you end up thinking about that. It ends up dominating your whole weekend where you're agitated, thinking about it all day Saturday, thinking about it all day Sunday, and not even really able to enjoy the time that you have. It's supposed to be about rejuvenating, replenishing. So really be mindful of that. If you notice, like, wow, I'm kind of running on fumes with energy and all this is getting to me, if you have the ability to take some time away, do so. And especially if you work in one of those tacky work environments, where they say, oh, man, We get it. Racism is a problem. We were unwitting parts of the problem before, but we get it now. If it's anything we can do, man, I am feeling it. This has caused me a lot of racial trauma, and I just need a little mental health time. If they've been saying that, they should be more than happy to accommodate. Paid time off. Lastly, she says, finally, one of the callers on the compensatory call-in asked for opinions about calling race soldiers in the workplace white supremacists. I advise against it, but VGQ, Victims Guarantee Qualified, do not. She has this in all capital letters, boldface print. Do not underestimate a race soldier's ability to twist what you say and for her antagonist to play the victim, whether she be ethnic white or pure blooded. Is it worth wasting money on legal fees? That is a question. It's unlikely to make a dent in the system of white supremacy, in my opinion. Female victim of racism. Cheetos forever. Anyway, BGQ. Lots of great observations there. UntilJustice@gmail.com. Maybe it was best that I waited a week to get all that in with the updates. The talking about racism in the workplace, though, just to make sure I get that in, I would not entertain any of those dialogues in the workplace. I've said before, you know, you're not there to talk, to give your views on white supremacy, racism. So it would just be, you can give them the one-liner. I don't talk about politics. I don't talk about any of this in the workplace. Lots of little one-liners, social distancing, lots of one-liners that you can give under these circumstances is just boop, nip that in the bud. And if they're talking to you, they even have articles talking about that, saying, advising white people to not overload your black employees, and they're not here to educate you about racism, and they're not obligated to talk about all of this, and even that can be a form of racism, going with some sort of expectation that they be a part of all this or listen to you gab about all of this. Just be, hey, again, social distancing, like, what is going on? I have work to do. I'm not really able to talk about all of this. I'm not really comfortable talking about all of this. That can be a great one right now. I'm not really comfortable talking about any of this. It triggers a lot of things for me. I'm just not able to talk about this in a workplace setting. Thanks for your concern and social distancing. Let's get back on the work. Lots of it, but I would not participate, and I would not sit there, not for 5 minutes, not for 30 seconds. I am not just going to sit here and listen and have a white person, oh, I had no idea. That's, unless that's our job. Like, I'm paid. We're part of some racism effort or what have you, and that's what I get paid to do for 40 hours a week. If I'm here to teach, if I'm here to do anything else, I'm here to work on the budget for 2021. Come on. They got podcasts and all kinds of things where you can do that in your free time. Now, let's get back to the budget for next summer. Thank you. Whew. Number is 605-313-5164. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. I see the folks with hands up. Now I just have to make sure I get in my public service announcement. The Rona, I think, is still happening. Racism and the protests is dominated still, but I think COVID-19 is still like a problem on the planet. So if you are going to an actual physical site to work, which I know that's a lot of folks as well, man, I would still be taking that very seriously. I would not allow your guard to drop, so to speak. It seems like a lot of people are still or have kind of eased off and, you know, hey, all that's over. And I would recommend taking that very serious. Having a mask, wash your hands, social distancing. I would not be eating in the cafeteria or wherever if they have some kind of group. I wouldn't even be eating with other people. I would be eating by myself. Take all of this super serious. If you have, you know, a work site, I don't know if it's shared or what have you, but if they have sanitizer, I know some workplaces they're providing like sanitizer and cleaning materials so you can clean your workstation when you get there. But just take it very serious. Clean your phone and all that sort of thing. Take it really, really serious. It seems like a lot of folks are not taking it serious, and thus these surges in so many states across the country. Take it very serious, and I would continue to monitor and request. I've said that for a few months now, I think. That, I think, is a massive act of black self-respect, just like our previous person who wrote in, black self-respect checking on another black person, just asking, are you okay? Black self-respect in, whoa, is my work condition safe? Am I jeopardizing my health? Let me make sure I'm doing everything that I can to make sure that I'm safe. That means asking questions about protocol and are we following the rules and that sort of thing. Man, take your health seriously. Nobody else will if you are a black person in the system of racism. Now, get to the other folks who dialed in. If you have a hand up, line should be open.
Hi, Jeff.
Be in Toronto. Yes, ma'am.
Hi, greetings to you callers and listeners. So I wanted to report that I took the COVID-19 testing today, and at one of the Toronto hospitals, they had a separate testing assessment center, so I went there, and I just had some tips on what to be mindful of, because I had asked a lot of questions today while I was there getting testing. Part of the reason as to why I was getting tested is because I received my start date from the new plantation that I'll be going into, and they've requested to have the testing to get clearance first prior to start in July. So I did that today. One of the things that they stated on the sign was that you cannot use the N95 with valves. And those are what looks like little filters just on the outside of the N95 mask. And the reason being is that it's meant to provide ventilation, so it's still allowing particles to go in and out of the mask, which would defeat the purpose of putting a mask on to prevent COVID spread. So just to be mindful of that. I was told that using the surgical mask is fine, or using the cloth mask is fine. There was another warning that they do not, they meaning the hospital staff, do not test COVID-19 for children under the age of 1 year old. So to be mindful of that as well. I was told that 30% of the COVID cases may test as a false negative. And that took me aback because I was like, that's a rather large number. And I didn't ask how many were false positives. So when I got home, I contacted the Toronto Public Health and spoke to a public health nurse to inquire further, because I wanted to first find out what is the incubation period of the COVID, if they're testing a false negative, if people are being tested as false negative, if they're indeed positive. And I know that in one of the newspapers, it mentioned that that particular data are for those who are asymptomatic, but are indeed positive. So I was told by the public health nurse that the incubation period for the COVID can vary among individuals. It can, the average is between 2 to 5 days for it to present itself. In some people, it can show up 9 days after exposure, and in others, it can show up even 14 days or later after exposure. So the incubation period varies, which is very uncharacteristic of a typical virus. So then I asked how many tests show a false positive, because usually if there's a false negative, there's also a false positive. And I was advised that there isn't any data at this time regarding that. So I'm still searching for more resources and around that information. And those were the main things the main information that I had received. So what I would recommend, if you can, please go and get tested. I understand in the States, Donald Trump was actually advocating for people not to get tested, which is deliberately suppressing the information and stalling the research on how to have this virus managed, if not eradicated altogether. Similar is happening in Ontario, where businesses are not being told that it's mandatory to have employees tested. The premier is not stating that it's mandatory for everybody to get tested. So they're suppressing the information, which I thought was really odd, because in March, there was actually a proposal to increase numbers, I guess in hopes that they would get more funding for this particular pandemic, by increasing the numbers and including those who may have died of other causes prior to the pandemic outbreak notice, and have them listed as dying from COVID-19. So it's so interesting as to how this information is being gathered, who is able to be tested and getting any clear direction around this. So I just wanted to pass that information on, and I leave the line. Thank you.
Much obliged. Be in Toronto. Did you get tested? Was that a requirement of your new job? Congrats again. Or was that voluntary? And how long is it going to take for you to get your results, which we all hope will be super negative? No false negative, but like authentically negative.
Thank you. Yes, they had mentioned that the test results here is as early as 3 days. And sometimes it can take 5 to 7 days. The way in which you can access your results, you don't require to go into back to the location for the assessment, the COVID assessment center. You're not required to do that, and you don't have to speak to your doctor to do that. They actually give you what's known as a medical record or MR number, and then you register online with your name, your date of birth, and your MR number, and it will highlight the results.
Okay. And was this a job requirement or just personal?
Oh, yes. This was a job requirement.
Okay.
But I would definitely recommend for everyone to do this, even personal, on a personal basis, just so that you're made aware and that you are informed as to what's happening, whether you have been whether you have been exposed to the COVID-19 or if it's a negative result. Now there is a caveat to this. Just because a person has been deemed negative doesn't necessarily mean that they don't have the COVID, because you can there's this several factors, being that one, the virus load hasn't been high enough to be detected as a positive. Two, you may have been negative when you got in, but then when you went outdoors, you came across someone who has been infected with the COVID-19 and got it 1 minute later or so. So there are other factors to take into consideration. And so I sent an article regarding that, that there's actually a doctor in British Columbia that feels that the testing is not effective because people can still get infected at any time. So, yes, I just wanted to add that as well to you.
Spectacular. Great to get information from around the world. Wow, that is... So much information to know, and even just contrast and compare and contrast that. That'd be interesting for folks that are in the States, or I guess anywhere in the world, in the States or wherever you happen to be. If you are doing any hiring right now, are they requiring you to get tested? Or even if you're already hired on a job, have they been requiring anyone to be tested as a part of, you know, employment? That would be good to know, especially for hiring. Like, I would think like teaching, things like that, like, wow, it's probably gonna have to get tested, and vaccine, I don't know. Lots to think about. That's why I said it's been nothing to celebrate for a long, long time. Number again, much obliged to be in Toronto. It's a lot to ponder. The number again is 605-313-5164, the code 564-943 pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. What type of test did they give? This will be my last question. I'm too curious. What type of test did you get? Did you do the nose swab thing, or did they do like blood work?
Yes. What they did was they did the nasal swab. I did inquire with the nurse who had done it if there was an alternate way, because I didn't like anything particularly coming up my nose. And she said that the nasal swab is the most effective way in order to detect. However, when I did further research, it had within that research, it said that in some cases, the reason why the virus is also not detected as readily is because the nasal swab has not gone deep enough in the nose. Sometimes the testing can go by throat, and sometimes the swab doesn't go deep enough in the throat to catch the virus as well, which I thought was unusual. Mm.
Wow. All right. Wow. That is, man, lots to consider. Like I said, if other folks, if that is a part of the requirement now that you have to get tested or, you know, staying employed or whatever it is, that would be good to know. Very different landscape as 2020 unfolds. Vaccine is probably looming somewhere. Let's see. Other folks who dialed in, if you have a hand up, commentary, questions, observations, line should be open. Proceed.
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am. Greetings, Bay Area mom.
Hi. Thank you. Greetings to you and the rest of the callers. I haven't been to work since I quit those kids. And they've got me something. I just haven't started yet. I don't know if it's because because I'm in California, and I think Gavin Newsom, or however, he's mandated. I think a week ago he mandated that we have to wear a mask, just wear them. And I haven't registered the mask rules. I just stay out of the way. So. And just do my normal stuff. I'm not really hanging out or anything, or in and out of wherever I'm going. So I don't know how it really works. I know he said something about if you're out doing maybe recreation, you don't have to wear your mask, but you got to stay 6 feet apart. But at work now, because I'm in the Bay Area, has been mandated a facial mask. So at work now, I have to wear my mask working with the children. So I don't know how that's going to work at all for me, because I'm not really fond of wearing the mask like that. I mean, I understand following the rules, and I don't mind following the rules, but I just don't know how healthy that would be for me wearing the mask at work versus just in and out of particular places. But we had a meeting yesterday, and they were talking about the mask and how we have to wear a mask. So I guess there's the company is trying to catch up with everything as well. And then we have different, because of the umbrella and how many companies are up under the person that owns us all at the job. They all different states have different whatever their regulations are. So it's wild. And I don't know. It's wild. So I don't know how it's going to work for me with the mask. I may have to take a leave of absence. I might do it. I might try it. But if I feel uncomfortable, that'll be my last day. And I'm not going to risk my health just for the twos and threes for these children. So not trying to be rude, but in real life, I don't want to risk my health for the little money that I'll get, because I'm breathing or I'm suffocating myself basically with this mask on for several hours, on top of the fact that I have to take my temperature as well every time I see a different client, and they only give us two now. So I might have to sit this one out. And That I don't know. I think they're going to have us back in lockdown, because the city, a city worker told me that they're going to shut down San Francisco, go back to shelter in place for the San Francisco. So I'm sure it'll trickle back down to us. So I guess I'll be sheltering in place instead of working with that mask on. So I haven't started yet, but they're trying to place me somewhere. So as things unfold, I'll keep you in the know. and I'll mute my line. And thank you for taking my call.
Wow. If I can ask real quick, what is the what's your concern about the problem wearing the mask while you're working with your clients? What problems do you think having the mask on for? Because it seems like it would be a longer period of time in addition to, you know, while you do your job. What problems do you think it might present for you?
Well, for me, it's hard to breathe. And because you have to cover your nose and your mouth, it just makes it complicated breathing. And so then for a long period of time, it seems like it would bother me. I've never worn it that long, but it just seems like it would bother me with my nose and my mouth covered because I have to cover my mouth as well. I mean, my nose as well.
Okay. I am no fan of the masks. I do wear my mask. Mm-hmm. I went to the store today and I, you know, had my mask on. I went to the bank, I had my mask on. And I've been wearing my mask for a while now. And even beyond that, it is mandated statewide in Washington. We are not one of the states that's had the massive rise, although it's not under control in Washington state either. But masks are mandated statewide. So, yeah, it's I'm not a fan, but I do wear it, and it is uncomfortable, especially now that it's warmer. Have you tried some different ones, maybe, to see if you can find one that's a little easier so that you can breathe? That's been like 2020. Nobody can breathe. Have you maybe tried some different ones so that you can breathe a little easier?
For the usage, I'm just in and out. I'm just trying to meet the requirements of the law, and then I'm usually back in the house. I've just wearing it a long period of time. That's my concern. I haven't tried that yet, so I was just thinking it's already uncomfortable just for the short period, but I do follow the law. I just being suffocated, like, well, it just seems like it's very strange wearing it like that. So that's it. And then a full period of time, and then I'm doing whatever with the children running around, nose probably running, and oh, gee whiz. So, and then the thing with the parents watching, because they're, hey, she cheating, you know, so just all of that, I might have to take a leave of that.
I feel you.
I'll try it. I promise I'll try it and see how it works.
It might be just, you know, since you already know that this is something that makes you really and I mean, breathing is important. Feeling suffocated, because, and I didn't think it was anything incorrect about that. Feeling suffocated, that's major. So it might just, you know, as a meager suggestion, like before you start, I don't know when your first day is starting. Before you go back, I might try and see if I could figure one and see if you can, like, have it on for, like, maybe an hour. Like, to just build, because you said you've just been doing the kind of in and out type, like I'm just going to the store or whatever. So see if you can just have it on for an hour, because I think that would be like a slower build up as opposed to having to be on the job and you're chasing, you know, children around and then got white people who are sitting there being supervised. What is she trying to take it off? What? And all that, as opposed to you can just be at home. It's just you and your son, maybe you and your daughter, whatever, but you're just there. And you can just, for this hour, I'm just going to sit on the couch or whatever and see if this one is tolerable. Or maybe you can try two or three and just, I'm going to try it on for an hour just here at the house and see if one of these is tolerable for me to just do an hour. And that way you can kind of build up. And it might also be one of those things where just having it on for an hour, just trying it up maybe an hour each day before you go back, might help you build up a little bit of tolerance, get a little bit more accustomed to it maybe. But I would definitely try to, you know, they try to break in new shoes. I would try and break it in before you start on the job to try and minimize some of that discomfort, feeling suffocated. Because, yeah, nobody wants to feel suffocated, especially in a workplace environment where white people will be watching. Man, yeah, let us.
I'll do that. I'll make sure I practice. I'll do that.
For sure. Let us know how it goes. And if any listeners, because I am sure you are not the only one, who is having, you know, some difficulties making an adjustment and, you know, figuring out the whole mask thing, and it's not comfortable. And if anybody has any tips, or if you even have a mask specifically that you feel like, hey, this one, I don't know, is, you will not feel that tightness. It works. It'll be effective and everything, but you won't feel tightness around your face. That would be great. Or if anybody has any tips to help kind of break it in so it's not such a difficult thing. But I have California, I think it's California, Texas, Florida, South Carolina, mentioned Dylan Roof before, where they say it's surging. Arizona, I think, is one. Michigan, where they've got a high number of, I think Oregon, right? Downstairs probably will be Washington soon, since Oregon is right there. But it's a number of states where, you know, looks like they might have to shut things down again. Everybody might have to go back home. Nothing to celebrate this year. The number again, 605-313-5164. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Quickly, I will get in another email. Person wrote in. I guess I missed a few emails last week. That is, looks like some people wrote in during the live program. So I guess some days I'm not as good at catching folks who are writing in as we are broadcasting live. But I do try to even catch those. UntilJustice@gmail.com. So black female caller wrote in. Different black female caller wrote in. Man, the situation with our caller in Colorado from last week, where she was talking about jokingly referring to a colleague at work as a racist to kind of get them to stop some of their incorrect racist behavior in the workplace, even though I think this was a non-white person that she was talking about doing this to. So we had another person who wrote in to give tips or their view. This person writes in, she says, for the Colorado caller, all I can say is white people move as one organism. Somebody, what is the Voltron? Voltron effect. Yes. Voltron effect. Yes. They all know each other. When I would make reports to human resources, the abusers all got word and were able to avoid everything. They were always 10 steps ahead of me. That's generally been my observation about white people collectively and human resources specifically. And I think we've had, I was going to say a couple, but I think it's probably more like many callers, listeners who have noted a similar experience where they make a report to human resources, or sometimes just another white person in the workplace, about something that could be racist, and it seemed like every white person in the building, from like the CEO to the sanitation department, knew about this incident and the wording, all of the information, and how they were going to neutralize this. Like, it was amazing. See, a Voltron effect that is very, very common. It cannot be understated, the amount of, if you want to call it, gossiping, unjust networking that white people do amongst themselves in the workplace setting and beyond. Most of it talking about mistreating other non-white people, but it is extraordinary. And they generally, that's how they end up being 10 steps ahead. They share that, they get on there. When we hear about the click for our caller in Florida, they get on those, you know, do those text messages and emails, or they get together for their luncheons and all the rest of it. And man, they metaphorically, they get on the same page about how they are going to handle the niggers. But VGQ, let's see. Double check and make sure I don't miss emails this time. Wow. All right. See other folks who dialed in, broadcast again, not for spectators. If things are that spectacular in your workplace, particularly this year, if things are going that smashing where you are not having any problems, with the Rona, like they are following all of the recommended health regulations about, you know, safety and social distancing, and they got gloves and hand sanitizer and all of that. Wow, that is amazing. Make sure you invest. racism-notes.blogspot.com. PayPal button is in the top right corner. But I find that hard to believe. If they are behaving correctly with regards to racism, health guidelines with regards to the Rona, like everything, like what a world, what a workplace. And they didn't do any tacky fireside conversations or any of the like about, you know, we care about the colored folks and George Floyd is our friend and all of that. If you are in such a workplace environment, consider yourself very, very fortunate. And I would say, look at your watch, because it's probably not going to last for the rest of the year, probably not going to last to the end of the month. So enjoy it while it's here. Let's see. Retired firefighter in Florida. Did you have commentary, sir? Should be with us as well.
Yes, sir. Greetings to everyone. I was listening to the caller that was mentioning about her problems with wearing a mask. And being that I professionally wore a mask that covered your whole face, it could be that she may have some form of claustrophobia. You know, and if so, you know, almost any time with that type of fear, the person would feel uncomfortable. And I'm imagining it might be even with a medical type mask, which is, you know, what everybody is wearing, that, you know, I'm uncomfortable with my breathing. It gives me the sensation that I can't breathe real good, you know, but I would say, as far as a recommendation, you know, maybe give yourself some practice with it in the comforts of your home, you know, that sort of thing, and kind of like extend it a little bit more on how long you have it on, extend it a little bit more, so when you go to the place where you have to have it on, that you, it may help. I don't know for sure. I'm just stating from the standpoint of claustrophobia is a real possibility with what I did, you know, and most people don't understand it as such. But yes, you are in a lot of confined spaces, and that can also be with the equipment that we would have on, you know, and so maybe you should try that out. Just a thought.
Much obliged, retired firefighter. That's right. They do have a lot of equipment, the face mask and all of that to be a firefighter. So, and I think that's a good suggestion too. Like if you can find one that is maybe a little less comfortable, if you can maybe do hang in there for an hour at home and then say if I can get through that hour and then take a big break and maybe even a reward. And then if you say, all right, next day, I'm gonna see if I can do like an hour, 15 minutes or hour 20 or what have you, and just see if you can build up a little bit of tolerance to see if that helps. But the claustrophobia aspect of it, that is legitimate, because I mean, that is, for some people, they do not like tight spaces. They don't like being in elevators. They don't like being, you know, in a closet to get clothes out, like none of that. So having something that's got to be wrapped over your face, and then, as you said, not for like 10 minutes, but for like hours, as you're trying to go get things done, like absolute, for some people, that is super suffocating, exact correct word that you used. So I would experiment, see if some are a little more comfortable, try it out. If other folks have any tips that might be helpful, that would be grand. Let us know. And even, I know some, it might be, I don't know if you tried it out, the mask is one. They also said you can take like a bandana or a scarf, because you can get like, they have some really soft scarves and what have you, and you could do that, and you could get like they said like a dryer sheet. In May, she was talking about, you can get a dryer sheet or something else and put that in the scarf or whatever it is, so that you have that added layer of protection, added filter. That might be a little more comfortable. That's what I was saying, like trying to, like if it's, you might do a mask and then try like a really soft scarf with like the filter in it, or a bandana, whatever it is, and see if one of those is maybe a little more comfortable, a little easier. Thinking the lightness of the scarf, that might help. But again, if folks have any other tips for folks who might be a little sensitive to having to have something on their face for long periods of time. I know it is not cool. It's been a whole lot of folks who have said, you know, this is not the most cool to have this on, especially if you're in a work environment where you might have to have that on for like 4 hours, 5 hours at a time, get a lunch break, and then have to put it back on for another 4 hours or something. Like, yeah, that is, like I said, nothing to celebrate in 2020. Let's see.
Hi.
B in Toronto. Yes, ma'am.
Hi, sorry. I just had some recommendations regarding the mask. If it is going to be a cloth one, I would recommend at least getting 3 or 4 so that you can alternate as you're washing the one when you get home that you've used. And then to find out further information as to how to wash it with care, because I'm sure you wouldn't want to be going in with the same cloth mask without it being sanitized. So that's one recommendation. What I found with the cloth mask is that it would, if it had sort of like the cord elastic, it tends to hurt the back of the ears, and it's really hard to breathe. So also the N95 mask can be pretty hard to breathe. So the one that I've been most successful with has been actually the one that I purchased over at Costco. I don't know if you have it as Costco in the States or Sam's Club, but they do have surgical masks there that are lightweight. They have the filter, it's breathable, and it's easy around the ears in terms of the elastic to keep it in place. So that might also be a recommendation. They come in a pack of 50. But also, if you can make your own to your own specifications and comfort level, then that would be ideal as well. And congratulations as well on getting out of that horrid plantation and looking towards new ventures.
Much obliged, B in Toronto. Taking it serious. Love it, love it. Great tip on, I guess, if you get the cloth ones, right, to get like 3 or 4 of them. That way you can rotate and clean them out. Don't use bleach. I heard that. They've had multiple reports, the looniness of the year. They've had multiple reports in Washington State about like a substantial spike in poisonings with like home cleaners and bleach, that type of thing. And one of the methods was people using bleach to clean their masks. Don't use bleach to clean your mask. But get 3 or 4 of them and then use like regular soap to clean it out. Boom. And then you can rotate, as she said.
I use peroxide.
Oh, okay. I'm not sure about that one, but I know definitely not bleach. Definitely not bleach for folks with that one. But yeah, and appreciate that as well from being in Toronto about the, I guess some of the masks are, I guess, known for being a little bit more difficult to breathe in, which is probably not surprising. Like I said, I'm sure it's a whole lot of folks. This is not comfortable and does have a feeling like you're being suffocated, like you know, you can't breathe, like something is obstructing your airway, because it is kind of. So, yeah, it's knowing which some of those are maybe ones to avoid and then trying out some that might fit a little better or feel a little bit better. Experiment. If anybody else has any tips that have been helpful in adjusting to all this and making it a little bit more comfortable to get through all of this safely as possible, please share. 605-313-5164, the code 564-943 pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Let's see, other folks, either if you have additional comments, suggestions, or I'll look out folks that we missed totally. Folks are lollygagging. I hope that means the folks that are spectating Nothing is happening. Nothing awkward. You are being treated well and safe in the workplace. And hopefully that means your non-white colleagues, if you have any other victims of racism that you work with, hopefully they are also being treated well in the workplace. No shenanigans. Everybody's got their mask and sanitizer. Hopefully it will last as long as possible, but keep your guard up and be at the ready. I'll give out the number one more time, 605-313-5164, the code 564-943-pound. Press star 61 if you would like to participate. We should be here tomorrow for the compensatory call-in, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. We'll catch up on what has gone down the last 7 days. Nothing to celebrate, but we will do our best to catch up on what has gone down. Man, try to make some sense of all of the madness. We will also be here on Tuesday. Make sure I got my dates right. Yes, Tuesday, June 30. Dr. Gerald Horn. I'm a little bit, I don't want to say embarrassed, but like, he's a pretty renowned scholar. Like, I'm sure a lot of our listeners are familiar with it. You should be, because we did his biography of Paul Robeson in the book club. So you should be familiar with Dr. Horn, even if you missed that book club segment. He has written so many books, I think almost all of them, about white supremacy racism. I've seen a number of his books. He's been on so many platforms. He's been talking about the protests of late. He's written about protests against police brutality. So I'm looking forward. He should be with us on Tuesday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. We will revisit a little bit from the Paul Robeson biography, as well as the protests and some of his other work. Will be a hoot to chat it up with Dr. Gerald Horn this Tuesday. Let's see. Our caller at 3784. Observations, questions, feel free.
Oh, thank you. Good evening to everyone. Also, in regards to masks, the CDC website gives examples of various types of masks and how you can make them. So, you may also want to consider that. And earlier with the program, you mentioned, or it was mentioned, the person cooking that's not native to the recipe. So my example, being from South Carolina, someone was cooking sushi. And the person who was cooking sushi was European, with a deep southern accent. So to watch him go through the process of preparing the sushi and having the deep southern accent, it was somewhat confusing. But evidently he is an instructor, a culinary instructor, and he was teaching everyone watching how to prepare sushi with a deep southern accent. And I will unmute my phone. I will mute my phone. Thank you for accepting my call.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you for the suggestions. I thought that they had that. I'll post that so folks can check it out, because they had that like on the CDC and some other sites as well. But I had forgot about that, where they show like, if you don't like, or if you don't have, because some places they sold out of them, the masks, you can make your own. Like I was saying, like you can get like a scarf or something else that's softer, perhaps, that might help in terms of it not feeling like you have something really tight and abrasive on your face, so you don't have that feeling of being suffocated. But yeah, I'll post that so people can see like the different masks, and it might be that some of those are a little bit more comfortable and maybe a little bit easier to maintain too. Something, I mean, if you can make something to just toss it in the washing machine, you know, every other day or whatever, as opposed to having to clean and dry and all that other wackiness, like, hey, that's even easier. And if it's still going to be safe, it'll get the job done. All for that. So I'll post the link for the CDC. There are different types of masks, and the cooking, that is standard operating procedure. One, it might be that white person, he might have gone to Japan. Like, he might be able to break out all kinds of, you know, $5,000 knives and fixtures. Look at all my Instagram pics while I was studying with master Japanese chefs and all the rest of it. And might be true. I have seen quite a bit of that myself, where some of these white people, Southern drawl and all, where they have gone to India and studied and all the rest of it. They went to Jamaica and studied and hung out in the sugarcane fields. Yep, they might even know how to make some great sushi or great, you know, jerk chicken or whatever it is. Still does not replace the fact we are in a system of white supremacy. That's how you got the access to even be able to go and get all that training. Sometimes they don't even have to go and do all of that, you know, to do all that. So I'm not saying that they always do that every time. Sometimes they can, you know, be kind of mediocre at all of this. And the racism white supremacy allows for them to still be an expert on sushi, Jamaican dishes, you know, Indian cuisine, whatever it is that we're talking about. That is the power of white supremacy, racism. And again, why I guess I would encourage maybe Gusty and anybody else, because we have a lot of foodies apparently who are cows listeners too. If you do any sort of cooking that's healthy eating, not just, you know, you want to post ribs and all the rest of it. I've had my share of ribs. They are not healthy. But if you do healthy cooking, man, more of that. And that way it'll be more videos of black people preparing healthy, tasty dishes to keep us working well, body functioning optimally, so we don't have to be scared that our immune system is going to crash every other day. Let's see, other folks who dialed in. Young Academic, they were talking about educators. They were in the group of essential workers, educators. Young Academic with us as well.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir. Good to hear from you, sir.
Greetings, Gus, callers, and listeners. I'm currently out of work right now, waiting on rescheduling on my practice. But I went for my pistol permit today. Is it okay if I talk about that?
Oh, yes, sir.
So I was terrorized today, and it was non-constructive, and it fails in comparison to the wonderful guidance and insurance I received in firearms on both yoga retreats. I was told to be there at the gun range at 8:45, and the meeting did not start till 9:20, and it ended at 2 o'clock. All whites were in, all non-whites were in attendance, mostly females, two black males. It was taught by a red hair, unprofessional white woman who began class by bragging that in another class she taught a woman who was complaining that she ended her class entirely early. Connecticut law mandates that the course is supposed to be a mandatory 8 hours. It was not. The whole time I felt rushed, and this white woman was the type of white woman to curse to like get gratification around black people, and I didn't learn much at all. We just took detailed notes. We were allowed to use these notes on the test, which was true or false. In fact, all of the answers except one on the test were true. The training consisted of the legal hurdles I would have to go through if I wanted to be a legal gun owner. Example, if I moved and did not inform within 48 hours of my moving, I could be arrested and face 3 years in jail and a fine of $5,000. My firearm training put me on edge. The entire time, she kept cursing at me, telling me that I wasn't effing good enough, and I was afraid of accidentally shooting this white woman. I passed, but I have to return to this location because they misspelled my name and on my certificate. On the yoga retreat, in comparison, I was calm, and I received excellent guidance from retired firefighter and Blue and the white trainer who we were with. And on the first, in comparison to the first yoga retreat I attended in Virginia, when we were just shooting in the woods, that was even better than what I experienced today. I felt confident, and I was, when I was unsure of something, I was given a certainty. The yoga retreats was the first time I was ever exposed to a firearm with dignity. I was so traumatized today that I couldn't take advantage of the discount they offered to stay extra and practice. One thing, two pointers I noticed at this gun range, we were not 6 feet apart. In fact, we were less than 3 feet apart. The instructor explicitly stated when class began that she would not be wearing a mask. And I noticed that when her boss later that day, she decided to wear the mask when we all decided to go to the gun range and start to train. And I did hear her and her boss over talking during lunch about President Trump's greatness. There were something else that I noticed. There were non-white people from all over my state, and most of them had driven like an hour to get there, and I was just wondering why would they have to drive so far just to train at this particular location. And another thing that I noticed, they provided like this cheap dollar store cleaner with paper towels, and it wasn't expressed to like clean your hands. They didn't sanitize hardly anything. I was just unsure and uncertain the whole time, but that was my experience today.
Wow. That is absolutely horrible. That is disheartening to hear. Young academic, four more years. Not that that should be a surprise at this point, but I was chuckling, not that anything we heard was funny this year, really, but I was snickering because I wrote down 4 more years when you said that the female instructor was bragging about not wearing, or I don't know if you said brag, but just, she's not said, I'm not going to wear a mask. She says it from the jump. I'm not going to wear a mask. That's where I wrote down FOMO years. Then you said at lunch, because you said her boss or whoever came and then seemed like she put the mask on and then they were talking at lunch. Like, boy, isn't our president great? Isn't he doing a great job? Wow. 4 more years. And I said, oh, I already had it down. I didn't need a little bit ahead of the curve.
One more thing. The video that she showed us was of a black DEA agent shooting himself accidentally. And she showed us that video on how not to handle a firearm. And she was joking about how he had received millions of dollars in a settlement. Because of that.
Probably because he got tacky training like you all did. Like, that's probably why he got the settlement, man. Training. We get such bad training in the context of the workplace and really throughout. I mean, the school system and the system of white supremacy. We heard about that yesterday. Remedial. Designed to be so. But just bad training. And probably it sounds like in this case. Now, I don't know. I thought you... correct me if I'm wrong, you said it was mostly non-white people who some of them had to drive kind of a long way to access this training. I suspect she may have, for this gun trial, I don't know if you all had to submit like a license in advance, so then she would have had a photograph, so it'd be no doubt. I know exactly who is going to be here. Did you have to submit a state issued ID?
I scheduled my appointment back in early May. And that's the thing about her misspelling my name today. When I went in, I had to submit my state issue ID, and which she took a copy of, and I don't understand how you could ever misspell my name and you have a copy of my ID right there. So I don't feel safe about going back to train at this place, because like I said, the whole time she was literally cursing in my ear, telling me that I'm effing too tall. I need to aim. I need to shoot lower. What the hell am I doing? It was horrible. And my biggest fear is that I was going to shoot this white lady in the face, and I just wanted to get out of there.
Wow. System of white terrorism. And this is a white woman. It's not the man. Racist woman, racist man, racist child. I would report her. I know a lot of times for training when I got my CPR certification and all the yoga certifications that I've received, they have some sort of like survey or where you get to give feedback on the person or the people who provided the training. I would like, and it wouldn't just be if they have the normal form, I would do that, but I would find out like, unless, is this like independent or is this through an agency? Like, I would contact the owner because there's so many things like the tardiness, especially if you said it's according to the law, it's supposed to be a certain number of hours and all the rest of it. Like
8 hours mandatory.
The lateness.
And it was not.
The lateness, you said you felt rushed, like we're cramming in material. And I mean, this is gun safety. Like, hey, we're supposed to take this seriously so that we don't have accidents and all the rest of us. We have some respect for a firearm. And then the profanity, and just everything. She's not wearing a mask, like everything, the way that she talked to you. I would write up a detailed report to the owner. And I would, if you had to pay, especially, I would be looking to get my money back. And I mean, wow, what, how is this promoting gun safety? Like, I thought that's what this is supposed to be all about. I didn't even feel safe in the training. Like, I would put that, I didn't even feel safe in the training for all of those reasons. I would write that up. That's exactly what Dr. Kamal Kanban would say. I would write it up and I would, submit it to whoever is the owner, who provides that training. I would submit it to them. And that might even be like a handwritten. That's one of Dr. Kamal Kanban's. I know we've had some listeners who, and even me myself, it's 2020 email. You can get immediate results, but Dr. Kanban says handwritten, but it's 2020, almost 2021. You could do the email. You can find the email, cause that's probably easy to whoever provides it. Like, look on the website, find out who provides it. They didn't even get your name right. You got a copy of my state issued identification so that I can get this. Like, this is serious. They don't just hand out these gun certifications. Why can't we even get my name spelled correctly? Like the unprofessionalism. That's exactly the same. Monumental unprofessionalism to the point where I did not even feel safe. That's exact. That word, I say that in a work context all the time. When you can bring up that word safe, I felt unsafe. Is this safe? Different ways where you can incorporate the word safety. It's a little bit more difficult for race soldiers to just, we're not concerned about safety. Really? Wow, get that written down. Like, what's the...
Just to compare it to the when I had a retired firefighter next to me in blue, on these yoga retreats, on the last yoga retreat, it was just like a complete, total, different experience. I felt at ease, calm, and I knew, like, if I wasn't unsure, they guided me, and this was horrible.
That was a big reason why we did the the first time was not planned, so I cannot say that the first time. Not the first time. Virginia, that was totally unplanned. MHDC did quite a bit of great training. I thought he was very courteous. I don't remember him cursing at anybody. What the hell are you doing? Stand up straight, young. I don't remember any of that happening from Imhon DC. Lots of black self-respect, patience, and safety when we were in Virginia and then when we were in Florida. Now, there, I can't say truthfully that that was a conscious part of the plan that we could have a group of black people go to the gun range. And even though we did have a white instructor, suspected race soldier, and they did have quite a bit of Trump paraphernalia throughout the store, I took pictures of it. I just felt like if it was a group of us, that might change the setting and make it a little bit better. Then it turns out there were other black people when we got there. But yeah, I felt like we had a very professional instructor. He didn't mess up anybody's names. I think I felt safe. I think everybody who was there felt safe the entire time that we were there. I don't remember him cursing. Certainly, I don't remember him being vulgar or cursing at any of us. He was patient, professional. I don't remember feeling rushed. Now, we weren't taking a certification, but I mean, we went through training. We did, you know, pay to get trained properly. And I don't remember feeling rushed. You know, it was encouraged. We could ask questions and that sort of thing. I would pay attention to that. If you're taking a training, any type of training, are they taking this seriously? Am I in an environment where You are here to learn. I want you to learn as much as you can possibly learn. Be excited and, you know, just totally curious about whatever our topic is for the day. That's the way a training should operate, about anything. I don't care what it is, CPR, defensive driving, firearm training, whatever it is. That's the way it should operate, not... So we're going to start about 30 minutes late today, and I'm not going to wear a mask, and we'll just see what we can get through. Like, oh man, you already know, like, let me go ahead and get my notes. I'm really writing for the report because I got really incompetent training. I was going to say, if they got a state issued ID, which I suspect is the case from everybody before they took this training, you said you signed up in May. Oh yeah, she already knew. Oh man. I got a room full of coloreds. Whatever. Think I might go out drinking the night before. It's a Friday too. Oh, yeah, you said it was today. It was a Thursday night last night. I got me a weekend. 4th of July is coming up. Heck, I might go out and do a little partying, get me a Rona groove on, and I can show up late. I don't even... We'll get through what we get through. Like, that could have totally been her
attitude. She did make a joke about going to drink.
Come on.
She did make a joke about leaving to go drinking.
Come on.
It's unprofessional. Yeah.
This, in my view, probably designed to be unprofessional. My suspicion, if you could get like a camera of just, you know, this is the video of how she operated, functioned, conducted your class, and then get footage of how she conducts a class and it's all white people. See if she does the same thing. Is she going to show up late and just cram in all this material? Is she going to be cursing at them and all the rest? Is that how she's going to function? Because you said she even changed her behavior when the instructor came in. She put her mask on. Is that correct? You said that right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I'm afraid about, I don't know about talking to him because he's such a, they're gun owners and they're Trump supporters. So I would possibly have to submit an email. I don't think I would feel comfortable going in there and handing him a handwritten letter talking about I want my money back. Being that there's so much gum, I'm surrounded by so much gum paraphernalia, I just don't trust it.
Email, if that feels safer, definitely take the email. But yeah, repulsive to have to deal with that for something where, you know, I would want the information. I mean, a firearm, everybody wants to be safe, right? That's what they say. We don't want to have accidents. You don't want to be the DEA guy and, you know, making fun of an incompetent black people. I would pay attention to that too. I think others have noted that we're in like a workplace context or a school context, training context, where they will use a black person as the example of incompetence, failure, something vile, criminal even. I think the caller in Florida had one where they were making up some example and pointed to him as the potential rapist. Like, even hypothetically, just making up a situation. Even we don't have to go to something that really happened. We'll just make up a scenario where we need a mythical Negro rapist. Yes, our young academic here. Yes, like, let's say if he was a rapist here and he tried to sneak in. So, like, dang, I gotta always gotta be the representative of, as I said, incompetence and criminality. If anyone has a better suggestion than doing an email, I feel like I would have to do an email at least to make an attempt to get compensation. And I totally feel you about to say, I mean, yeah, these are white people with guns, and these are white people who will be responsible for 4 more years. I totally feel you about safety and all that. If folks have any suggestions for young academic in terms of, you know, the best way to go about responding to such unprofessional treatment at the training, if you would do the email, not do the email, or any other methods of handling this, that'd be grand.
Can I be heard?
Retired firefighter who it was suggested that he was so helpful and professional with the firearm training in Florida, you should think about a career and training other black people so they don't have the type of experience young academic reported. That was said almost verbatim down in Florida.
Yeah, well, it's just a
practice, because coaching, it's all a part of coaching in itself. And you have to have a certain type of behavior, when you, interact with other people. And I've seen all of the different styles. I've studied all of the different styles. And, if that person is a teacher, a coach, a quote unquote parent, even, attempted parent in our case, it all comes out the same on how you interact with that person or that group. And I can't say the word, the combination word on your program, but that particular person would come under the column of a, you know, whole as far as that's concerned. I see it. Persons with that type of style, for the overwhelmingly, from my experience of being around teachers, myself as a coach and other coaches, overwhelmingly has been white people. In their, especially in their interactions with non-white black people. It's overwhelmingly, they lead in the numbers, but your suggestion about some sort of correspondence, a letter or something, it does make sense. And I'm going to tell you why, because she probably is not the proprietor. And even with a suspected racist, that's a proprietor. If they let you come through that door, they're interested in you coming back for more. White people love money too. And from the standpoint of a person that's a professional that has access to other people, you know, that would come and patronize that business, they may not be fully aware of that behavior going on, and they may want to know. They may want to know about it. And so, you know, it's like what I say with people who don't want to abide by the rules of the pandemic. You know, what are you standing to lose, you know, by practicing the safety? The same thing with in this case, you know, you get the opportunity to send that person a letter and, you know, mention about who you are as a teacher yourself. And you are exposed to a lot of people who may be interested in coming to your facility. You know, say some complimentary things about the facility that is good, other than her, of course. You know, as far as that concern, and I would like to share this with other people, but I'm afraid that they may have this person as the teacher. And I wouldn't like for them to have the same experiences that I had, you know, that sort of thing. But it's a you know, learned behavior, and I guess I had good people to coach me. The main one was the person who gave me birth, you know, as far as coaching is concerned. But that's all I have to say. That's my thoughts on that. Thank you.
Much obliged, retired firefighter. I think that's a great inclusion he just offered in terms of mentioning that you're an educator here in the area, and, you know, thought about bringing in some of your fellow educators and colleagues and recommending other folks to come try out this place. And I'd even mentioned, because as he said, even race soldiers love money. Like, hey, I was looking forward to using my 30% discount, but I was so disheveled, discombobulated. After the experience, and I wouldn't even mention racism. Like you said, you're in four more years territory, but I would mention didn't start on time. She wasn't punctual. My name was misspelled. You have my state issued ID. We rushed through the material. She cursed during the training. I felt unsafe as a result of the haphazard and unprofessional manner of it. I would use that word unprofessional. Maybe see if I could even get it in there twice. And that's the way that I would approach it. Like, I would send it in just that manner and My suspicion is he will do something to rectify, like it might be compensation for the training or something. But yeah, he will. They will try to do something to make things right. I would send it to the owner, not her, and yes, kind of see what happens. But that's But that is standard operating procedure. I can only say that in terms of at the gun range, and I've heard from a lot of non-white people who have reported at minimum like uncomfortable experiences, if not outright tackiness and or mistreatment, and or just feeling intimidated about being there anyway, because they felt like it would probably be exactly what he said. A lot of Trump paraphernalia and John Wayne statues and, you know, Charlton Heston, all the rest of it. So, yeah, I can totally understand. And yeah, that was why we did a lot of that at the yoga retreats, try to provide a better experience and try to go in groups. I know it's not always feasible because he said it was mostly non-white people there, but try to go in groups. And if you get unprofessional experience or unprofessional treatment, mistreatment, really, make a report. You would be surprised if you can make a report, especially if it doesn't mention racism. You can just point out incorrect behavior and where they didn't even follow their own standards, policy and procedure. Wow. A lot of times you can be compensated. If anybody else has a suggestion for young academic, you can feel free to share. Or if you have your own situation, problem, success, if we have anybody who has had some things working well, feel free.
Hi, Gus.
Be in Toronto.
Yes, I had a suggestion to young academics. Is it possible within that letter or evaluation that you request a refund of your funds from that training? And if you could redirect that money on your own terms to a more qualified location where you will be getting the high quality service and training that you pay for. But then again, I'm only going by the assumption that you're actually that you're paying for this training. So if possible, are you able to get a refund and a request for that refund? What is the policy around that with this particular company that trained?
It is a third party agency. It's not connected to the state. And my training was $95. I did pass the training. My biggest fear is that I had people, non-white black people, coming in like that live like an hour away. I don't think there's other gun ranges. This is in a urban inner city neighborhood and it's owned by white folks. I don't think there are other gun ranges in the area. So I think that's why I saw so many non-white black folks there today. And that's why they had to travel so far. And my biggest fear is that I would have to go back to get, because I just got my pistol permit. I wanted to get like a concealed carry, and I don't want to be that guy that is labeled and create trouble for myself. Being that if I can only use this one particular facility.
No, I can understand that. And thank you for the insight. It does make it difficult, but they are the only ones pretty much that can offer this training based on what you've mentioned.
I believe so, and I believe that the lady, she was very unprofessional. She was bragging. She began the training by bragging about how many guns she has in different rooms of her house. And I don't know. And the thing is, she did mention that another lady had complained about being rushed. My training was supposed to be, it was supposed to last until 5 o'clock. I left at 2 o'clock. And she was, she led the demonstration with slides, and she would rush the slides to the point where you're supposed to be able to jot down, like to take good concise notes. You're supposed to be able to jot down the stuff on the slides. And what she would do, she would summarize it and then fast forward the slide really quick. And then next thing you know, I would have to talk to my neighbor to see what I missed or what she missed. It was just very unprofessional. And I don't know about returning to this particular place, let alone owning a gun in a state of Connecticut. It was, she mentioned a lot of negatives about owning guns, and I don't know whether that was particularly geared to non-white black folks that she was teaching. It seemed like a big hurdle. I don't know if it's no longer worth it.
No, what you've gone through was certainly tacky, trashy, and terroristic from that white terrorist part. For the other patrons who or employers that came for that same training, do you have any contact with them? Could it be possible that it could, so that it's not just coming from you, it could be as a group? Or at least a few that have the same sentiment to say, you know, this is what occurred to make it even stronger so that this so-called trainer can be, you know, not train again if possible.
I do not have any contact with the non-white black people I was with today. There was a Muslim couple that was there, and I was one of two black males, and the rest were black females. And I do not have any contact with them. And we did our classroom sessions together, but our training, our specific training, in which she was I'm mistaking that. We practiced with the gun, like a fake gun in the classroom, right? And then she called us randomly, and that's when she started doing a yelling in my ear. And then we had our, towards the end of the day, we had the selected training, and that's when she really took it up a notch. And I was trembling. I had to literally go home and take a nap because I was trembling. I thought I was going to accidentally shoot this white lady because I was trembling so bad. So.
Context of white supremacy. That is very, very common, that sort of impact where, and particularly that sort of language, that's what black self-respect all the time, that sort of languaging, that's, I would say frequently, for the most part, it's not that vulgar, you know, cursing at you and that sort of thing, although they do that sometimes, but generally, but I mean the experience that a lot of us have in school, the experience that a lot of us have in the workplace, it's about the same thing. Different language, sometimes they do it with a smile. She was probably saying all that with a smile, but it's the same effect. Total destruction of black self-respect. You're incompetent. There's something defective about me. Can't get right. Just can't win. Constant, especially in the workplace. We talk about that all the time. Totally undermine you so that you think you are totally incompetent, totally inept, whatever it is that we're supposed to be doing. That is constant in the workplace with racist man and racist woman. So glad that this was a white, well, not glad, but we got to have an illustration. White woman, racist man, racist woman, racist child. That is the problem. The number, much obliged, young academic. I'll give out the number if other folks have any other suggestions. I would definitely do an email, though. I wouldn't mention racism, but I would do an email. The number is 605-313-5164. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. If it just happened, I'm just thinking here, you can ponder on it. If this is the only location, only like gun store in a substantial radius, like, you know, there really aren't many other options, and you really want to conceal carry, you could wait maybe 6 months or a significant amount of time and see if they have a different trainer, if, you know, if it's possible after some time, if somebody else might be available to offer this training. That might be an option. Hopefully you can get compensated. You can get your money back for this. But I mean, you could wait where you might be able to take that 30% discount or whatever. They might say 50% or whatever to get the concealed carry permit with a different trainer. After you've had, you know, 2-3 months to heal, it's not going to be her. Competent trainer. You did want the concealed carry. That might be something to think about down the road. But I mean, that would be provided that you do get compensated. Like, they would have to do the correct thing about this, you know, extraordinarily unprofessional conduct, compensation, make you whole for that. And then that might be a part of the making whole. Like, you get compensated for this and then get a nice discount for the concealed carry with a totally different and totally competent professional trainer in the future. Just something to think about. If other folks have either suggestions for Young Academic or any other folks, our Bay Area mom who's having some difficulties with the mask that was suffocating her a little bit, anybody have any tips for what's been shared, or if you have your own situation, feel free. *61 if you are on the line.
May I be heard?
Caller in Florida, yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, sir. Greetings to Gus, the host, the listeners, and callers. I have some reports I'd like to share. A few of them I've been meaning to share with or about a newer, younger black male employee who I think was mistreated in two separate incidents. The first was towards the end of the day. He routinely brings in the mail that I have to process to go out. And there was a white woman, Trump supporter, definitely. She, at the same time, was bringing in mail to go out from upstairs in the courts. So I overhear her say, "Oh, are you following me?" As the two of them were leaving the basement area. So I said, "Huh, there it is again, you know, just because someone is behind you walking in the same direction, that concluded in a white woman saying to a black male, "Oh, are you following me?" So I said, okay, let me jot that one down. And another time when this guy, he was bringing in documents that needed to be taken out to the drive-thru, and non-white person showing major anti-blackness. So she says to me that, "Oh, you know, I seen the guy come from archives, and I was waiting and waiting for him to bring these documents." And I said to him, "Oh, well, were you walking the dog?" Okay, basically saying, "Oh, well, you know, lazy and shiftless, and you're not punctual." That's the word they like to use. So I said, "You know, don't ever say that to him again. Like, don't say that." My next one is the social media once again. Another Trump supporting white woman, also click member, I label, code word. She made a post that was during the heightened time of the protest. All right. And it was her and other white women on there. One white woman commented saying a few pow-pows out of the window because it was a red truck with an American flag on it. And it was a bunch of people, I guess, you know, trying to jump onto the truck or climb into it or whatever it was. So that's the context. White woman says a few pow-pows out of the window and they'll learn their lesson. Okay? And I'm tired of looking at these videos. I'm so frustrated. Another white woman replies, this is raising my blood pressure. If they lay one effing liberal finger on my Jeep, I'm going to leave with all your teeth. This is a white person saying this. Like, you can see the image, like the profile picture and the person's name, bold, you know, of course, MAGA and everything like that. But mind you, the actual person on the account, she didn't really say too much, but obviously she was supportive of the comment. And I say that to say, the black female victim apparently made a post of wearing a dress on Juneteenth. Okay? And hashtag melanin, a bunch of other stuff. Two click members click to like the image. Okay, so how about deception in that area, right? You have that kind of hostility, and you, but yet, oh, well, we got to still make sure, you know, we're showing we have some kind of inclusiveness with the black person. All right, and my next one is I'm noticing they placed two black bailiffs in security when I enter the back door after I made my report. Now, I thought that was very interesting because I hadn't even seen these guys before. The same spot where the guy was that made that comment about the gun, they put a black guy there. I noted that too. All right. And I got two more. I'm noticing that the reaction to when I make the routes around the office, I guess, you know, a lot of the white coworkers trying to be kind, benevolent, or whatever. And a conversation starts about the protest and the black NASCAR driver getting the noose, I guess, in his garage or whatever. So this lady is saying, you know, I went to the protest. You know, me and my son, we wore these shirts that said Ahmaud Arbery, George Floyd, you know, I can't breathe and stuff. All right. And she said that the black male brought up the, you know, the news report about the noose. Okay. So I didn't really contribute any comment. I just kind of just walked on, mind my own business, all right? And my last one kind of has two parts to it because the white person in charge mentioned about a day furlough that they're going to do to everyone's pay. I'm still not really getting the logic of it because when I was speaking to the supervisor, you know, apparently it's supposed to take place after the recent paycheck we just got. All right. And she was saying that I don't know if they were going to do things with scheduling or whatever, if they were going to change it up or what. And she made the terms, we're still waiting to flesh things out. So that's another word I had to underline, flesh. And she said to me that, you know, she got reports from the black female that her entire, like, aunt, immediate family is in the hospital with COVID, all right? And she said that another person in the clip, said she was exposed. She may have been exposed to someone last Friday who may have had the virus. So I don't know. I guess she may be in quarantine, but she doesn't work in the group that I work in. Neither of them do. And I had a non-white person also say that she just wanted to express to me how stressed out she was that, you know, we were furloughed today. And I can't trust saying this to nobody else. So just imagine how amazing that is. The black person is the person you come to when you have that stress and that sense of anxiety and fear. But you on the side where the white folks are. All right. See, so think about how interesting that is. And that's all I have for now. Thanks for allowing me to share.
This was a black female, you said, that came to say that about the furlough, but she works on the white people's side?
She is non-white. Okay. I want to say that she's a black person.
Okay. Non-white, non-black.
Yes, sir.
Okay. I'm having to rethink now. Does this person kick it with you? Like, does this person come to talk to you any other time about anything else?
Very rarely she does, because, you know, we're just stationed where we usually sit at. So a lot of the time she just pretty much over where her area is, you know, doing work at the front counter. But, you know, she does speak and she showed courtesy or whatever, but for her to make the comment and say that you're the only person that I can, you know, express this to about how worried I am about getting 8 hours taken off of a paycheck. But I know they had been talking about it when the clerk sent out the email, so I just thought that was interesting. And that was the same person that gave me the box of M&M's, the peanut M&M's.
I can't do it. Oh, man. Well, you all are friends now. That's it. M&M's make friends. That's what, yeah. You all are friends now. Woo. Man. Oh, man, that makes it even worse that this is the M&M's. Like, man, I don't know. Like, I don't... Is that our role? Is that the Negro role? Like, anytime it's bad news and difficult days, like, oh, yes, let me go find our old colored folks. I can talk to you. You know all... I mean, really? Like, nobody else is disgruntled about missing out on some hours on that? Nobody else is disgruntled? Nobody else could relate to that? Just me in the Negro section? Like, you're the only one. I mean... Yeah, I don't know. I would feel some type of way about that.
And she asked me if I was a Christian, too.
Oh, man, yeah. Social distancing. We got to quarantine. I have to talk to you later. Get my mask and my... I got to go wash my hands. I'll have to talk to you. Woo! My goodness. It has been nothing to celebrate all year long. It's been tacky. It's just been one sequence of tackiness and terrorism all year long. Speaking of tackiness, she said all we need is a little pow-pow out the window, and that'll show, like,
yeah,
at the courthouse? Like, what? Four more years. We had a white woman who was at the gun range doing the training with young academic. Pow, pow. That's all we need. Set them straight. It seems like we got frequent references of these white women talking about their guns. We had the CLIC member who did the social media post about the you protect your family your way. Now I'll protect my way with her little fire. I mean, they racist woman. They are holding it down at the courthouse. Let's see. Oh, I lost my note here. Now, I think that's important if I got it right. Now, speaking of social media posts, she said, one of you leftist liberals, what have you, lay a finger on my Jeep and I'll leave with your teeth. Okay. Now, the violent. Now, you can kind of get away with that one, leftist, but I mean, we're talking about George Floyd and all that. They're talking about niggers. That's, you know, I think that's kind of code for, that's really who we're talking about, you know, running some teeth over with. How is that not under the sun? That's the type of thing that would be in Gavin DeBecker, The Gift of Fear. If I have a coworker, I mean, think about that. I leave with your teeth. This is not, you know, you touch my child and I'll beat you down, or you touch my mom or something like that. You touch my Jeep and I leave with your teeth. I mean, wow, that's like a whole nother level of barbarism, like collecting body parts of people who, you know, lay a hair on your automobile. Like they didn't violate your person or your family, like your vehicle. Wow, you got a 2021 Jeep outside or something? Like what? Racist woman. I said that repeatedly. Those racist jokes are generally about violence. It's not just, you know, hee-haw and, you know, black people are dumb, but it's generally violence. Killing. Collecting body parts. Yes. And it's fun. Let's see. The following, I thought that was so important. That this black person, white woman again, they're walking through the little corridor or whatever, and it's the same thing I said before. It's something criminal. It can't just be, oh, hey, Bob, how you doing? All right. Isn't that President Trump wacky? Oh, okay, you have your little casual banter. You can't just be, no. Oh, Lord, are you trying to rape me? Because that's what I said. Said you're trying to sneak a bomb in the court. He's got a bomb. We had one. You know, I need to shank him. It's always something criminal. It's always something dastardly that the black person has done. We got a stalker in the courthouse. I was trying to go to my locker to get a sandwich. Is that allowed? Like, no, I'm not trying to rape anyone. I'm not stalking anyone. I did not have a shank in my pocket. I'm just trying to get to my locker. I mean, and this is that's what I mean. Those types of comments, I was just joking. That sort of thing has an impact when you are constantly being criminalized every day, all day long. Oh, you broke this? Are you following me? Are you trying to rape me? Did you break in my car? All day long. No, I did not. Did you put the wrong information on the website? No, it looks like it's accurate. All day long. Even just the time and energy of having to respond, like, how am I supposed to respond to that? Like, are you kind of accusing me of stuff? Because, I mean, that happens a lot where that ends up getting serious. Tulsa racer, didn't they say how that's how it happened? Bumped into me? Another stalker? That type of exchange, because it's so common, you can think about, you know, what would be the best way to deal with that type of situation, solving problems without creating any new problems. I probably wouldn't say anything. I talk about a lot of times where you don't need to say anything. You can just put that down, write that down in the log, accused of, you know, being a stalker, and write down what was actually said. Are you following? Whatever it was. Date, time, all that. I probably wouldn't say anything. I don't, you know, it's nothing to joke about there. I don't hear that too often unless it's an all day long type thing where we keep ending up going in the same place. It's like, wow, I just keep seeing you. That type of thing. But I mean, if this is just, I haven't seen you since Monday, and it's Friday, and I'm coming around. Oh, are you following it? Keep right on walking. No need to respond at all. She didn't ask a question. Probably practicing racism. I'm not going to say a word. If folks have, I guess, a better Yeah, a better response. And that's one you should probably have because it's likely to happen. Some type of tacky accusation about you following somebody or something like that. Just have in mind how you would respond to that. Bravo for black self-respect, looking out for other black employees. It's a lot of tackiness going around. And I know for some people, they do not say anything if another victim is being mistreated. Totally feel you. That is logical. But bravo for black self-respect, speaking up for other victims of racism. That is always right on, right on. Yeah, I'm still pondering. I'm not saying I would be rude or discourteous, but it would definitely be social distancing. That would be in the same category. I'm not going to listen to a white person sit here and whine and moan about, you know, times that they called someone a nigger or told a racist joke or whatever else they did and they want to repent to me. I'm not going to listen to that. I'm not going to listen to some other non-black, non-white person that thinks, oh yes, I will come and share my sorrow with the Negro in the office. I'm not going to listen to that either, especially if we're not cool. We don't have any sort of rapport. You can social distancing. You can ride too. Let's see. Wow. Always. I forgot with the Jeep and teeth. The teeth part was so traumatizing. Now you got one in the click. You touch my Jeep, you lose your teeth. Now in the same click, they're going over and they see the black female, melanin, summertime, yeah. Juneteenth. Oh yes, we love that. That's beautiful. We'll put a few likes down. Now, number one, you should not be homies with any of your colleagues on social media. A huge no-no. Said that before. You shouldn't have your social media and your name, anything like that. You do not want your coworkers, even your non-white coworkers, rifling through your social media posts and pictures. I mean, wow, you are asking for all kinds of trouble. That is the most important thing out of all of that. That should not be you. Your coworker should not be able at all to be going through and giving you likes and comments about anything. Number two, that just shows, in my view, the cunningness of the you want to talk about refined racists? I bet I would be willing to wager like a substantial chunk of change. Like, wow, one of those white ladies who left a like is probably one of the same ones over here talking about you protect your family how you want. I protect my family how I would. One of the exact same people. Like, yes, that is how we get down. Oh, look at the little Negro. Doesn't she look a little Planet of the Apes dress there? Yes, we'll give her a little. And then I go right back on my page and do all my racism. Yes. And we get confused about, like, no, she's not a racist. She gave a like. Look at that. I was posting about being melanated and right for that. And she gave a. Now, do you think a racist would like a post talking about the beauty and power of melanin? Yes. 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 Yeah. Donald Stone. Yes. What in the world? That is important. Now, that's not as important as number one. Your coworkers should not be able to like or comment on anything on your social media page. Number two, that is how slick race soldiers are. Take a few seconds, click, yes, and then we come over here, yes, like, and I voted for Obama. We'll give him a few likes too. Yes, and then you come right back over and go right back to work. Master deceivers. Let's see. Much obliged, caller. I guess take it serious. Like, man, that is one of the areas in addition to California where it's like the virus is surging, so they say. Governor DeSantis has not done a good job. That would be another one. I would be all about taking it serious. That's probably why. Like, man, I would hope everybody is. We might have to shut things down again. Like, we did such a poor job. Like, that was one of the areas that's been a whole lot of where they were bragging and we need to go back out, hit the beach and all that. They were doing those Elvis weddings and all that nonsense. And here we are. Take it serious. I've said that. Take it serious. Take it serious. Masks. Wash your hands. I'd be telling everybody, social distancing. We're not hanging out to talk about anything. Social distancing. Go back to your desk or wherever you're supposed to be at. Let's see. Other folks, the number 605-313-5164, the code 564-943-pound. press *61 if you would like to participate. I would use that all the time. Even once if they cure COVID-19 tomorrow, I would still be using social distancing. Like, I would be using that forever. Like, that alone should be reason enough. Like, we shouldn't be standing around gossiping about nothing. Like, you can call if we got to talk about something, or email or text or whatever it is, but we can't sit around and gossip about nothing. Social distancing. Other folks have comments they wanted to get in, either suggestions or what we've heard, suggestions for young academics, gun range situation, or folks having difficulty with the mask, or your own situation. Anything else they want to make sure they share? Last few moments. Again, we'll be here tomorrow. Compensatory call-in. 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. What a week to try to catch up on. We'll try to cover as much as we can. Hopefully have some suggestions. Try to keep sane and safe amidst all of the madness. Again, we'll be here on Tuesday. Dr. Gerald Horn, illustrious historian, scholar down in Texas. That's another location. They said the so-called virus surging. Take it serious. But Dr. Horn should be with us on Tuesday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. We'll discuss, try to touch on a little bit. Can't do a whole lot because he's written so much on so many different topics, but we'll try to cover what we can, the time we have in for this coming Tuesday evening. Folks all good, or other things, suggestions, comments they want to make sure they get in as we get ready to wrap things up?
May I be heard?
Caller in Florida, yes, sir.
Oh yes, Gus. I wanted to add, I think some more terrorism is going on in a certain way, where I think there's been some conflict between the black female supervisor and once again, more groups of white women that she supposedly, I guess, is over. Like, I believe I mentioned, and maybe I didn't, that there's some documents that I'm supposed to take to this person. She came out of retirement, and she used to be a supervisor herself. So white female says, so, hey, you know, the next time you bring a stack of papers down here, you know, come and show them to me before I bring them to the white person. All right? So, and she also said, because if they want to watch me, I'm going to watch them too. So, I kind of thought about what that meant. And while she was saying that, she has two white people that sit in front of her office. So, more than likely, they, one of them at least, were in some way probably trying to look at how she was even mouthing the words, because she didn't really say it that loud. But they are definitely monitoring surveillance, as you mentioned. So, you know, I took it to the white person, and I guess they had a disagreement with something. So one time I walk in there to pick up mail, and she was having a meeting with the staff, the department. So the same woman, white woman, interrupts her and says, oh, well, Kim, did you remember to get the envelopes from that place, that one? So, and then another one did the same thing, said, oh, hey, how are you doing? I think that was an opportunity for them to practice racism against the black supervisor. That's how I perceived it. And I wanted to share that as well, because this person also, who they brought out of retirement, is dating a black male. So I wanted to share that really quick, and that's another thing I've been observing. And thanks for allowing me to share.
A little bit of black self-respect. You all are going to spy on me and have me under surveillance. I can do the same thing. Love it. And I am certain that there are all kinds of efforts to undermine her. And we've heard that for years. If it's a black person, and they obviously they're not in charge, but if they have even, you know, any position that looks like they're a little bit more than like a janitor or something, in the building, like, oh my God, yes, we're going to see if we can undermine and sabotage them and interrupt. Did you remember to go and grab? Did you remember to do this? Yes, I'm confident. Can I get on without being interrupted? Thank you, kind. That's what I mean. When you have that all day long, are you following me? Interrupting you when you're trying all day long, like, that is not a so-called microaggression. Those incidents of white supremacy, that explains a lot in terms of why black people end up having hypertension and high blood pressure and all kinds of other health problems when you have that those incidents of white supremacy all day long, day after day, year after year. It accumulates, especially when you don't understand that's what that is. That sounds like at least this black female has some inkling, like, these folks are, they are doing something. And like, yeah, she seems like she has some understanding. She's a little less confused. And it might even be focused. You mentioned she's in some sort of arrangement with a black male. Like, that might even be a part of it. You know, if they find out that you're married to and all about black male, black female, and serious there and trying to have a family and be a so-called adult, be a so-called man, be a so-called woman, like, oh God. Oof. That's generally been my observation. What other folks have reported, they are not interested in supporting that at all. At all. Not going to be, oh, joy, you're getting married. Oh, bravo, you're having, not. In fact, I wouldn't even talk about that. That wouldn't be something where I would be bragging or not supposed to have pictures of anyway, of your significant other, husband, fiance, whatever it is. So yeah, keep all that to a minimal, so that they don't know a whole lot about you. You just come into work, and expect all kinds of sabotage and disruptions, especially if you are competent and quiet. I don't know if this is like a really intelligent black, like you said, they were bringing her back from retirement, so I'm sure she's not ignorant. Yeah, they are not interested in seeing some competent black person come hang out who has some seniority and might be more intelligent than them. Like, oh God. That's probably why they're interrupting her, like, to purposely see if we can do something about that. Like, yeah, we know. We know. Just see if we can practice racism anyway, do some interrupting while she's here. Let's see. Much obliged, caller in Florida. Other folks, comments, observations that they want to make sure they share. Everybody satisfied? Anything else they need to get in? Are folks good for this Friday evening? We will assume folks are good. We will be here for Saturday compensatory call-in. We will catch up for the week. Try to make some sense as we head. Oh, man, the holidays. I guess I'll get in this really quick. I don't know if they're doing it. Hopefully they won't. I know I've had quite a few jobs where they do some sort of tacky summer picnic or what have you. Hopefully the Rona will shut all of that down. And that would be my suggestion. If I was working any of the places that I've worked where they've done like a summer barbecue or anything like that, I would be the first one up. Do you think it might be best for us to postpone this year with the COVID-19 situation? Form of a question. All you might need is one other person, or even just suggesting it, even if they still have it, it might be optional this year. Like, you at least can get yourself out of it personally, that you have the option of not going. If you have concerns about the Rona, you can opt out of the company cookout and, you know, do whatever it is. That's what I would do. I would at least make sure to question. And then if they don't include that, I would ask if you can make it voluntary for people who have concerns and who feel like that's an unnecessary risk during a time of health crisis. That's what I would use right there. If they have it, hopefully they have already shut a lot of that stuff down. But I mean, it's been a lot of cookouts and big time gatherings anyway. That was what the caller reported doing the social contract tracing and all that. So, yeah, if that is being suggested or hinted at all, that's what I would use. We would not. I would not be participating in any of that. Hopefully they won't have any of those. Hopefully they won't have any of that sort of nonsense as we proceed with the summer. Anyway, stay safe. Ask questions. Take the COVID-19 situation seriously in your workplace. Social distance. Wash your hands. I would wash down your, like I said, your workstation and all of that good stuff. Take it seriously. Even if you're around, or especially if you're around others who are not taking it seriously, try not to allow that to influence your behavior. Really strive to have a code that is all about, hey, I am promoting health and safety until I have a lot of information that, you know, okay, things have changed and all this is not necessary. That's it. Whew. Sobriety would be best under conditions of white supremacy. We are going to need our brain computer working at maximum efficiency. We do not need any narcotics, alcohol, poisons, disrupting our body's health, healthy functioning of our brain computer. In addition to being sober, let's be buckled. Again, I'm still on the position. It's not really the best time to be out and about, just joyriding and having fun. A lot of armed white people. The Rona is a big problem in a lot of different areas still. Just not the best time to be out and about unnecessarily. If you have serious errands, things to do, get that done. But it would be very strategic. And then I'd be right back at the house once everything is complete. Being super alert as you are out and about. I mean, super. If it looks like anything could go awry, something is not quite right, anything looks unsafe, scratch everything. We will try this again at a later date once things are safe. It's just not a good time to take risks. They even had the video here in Seattle where a black male confronted a white female motorist. And that's the exact type of thing that I said we should be striving to avoid. This is not a time where you want confrontations and skirmishes out in public with strangers. You want to be avoiding all of that. You have no idea if this person is armed. Are they with a group? Do they have other folks hanging out waiting to come and support them? Real dangerous times under the system. Take it serious and really be about preserving your life, health, and well-being. If you are going to go out, you're vigilant. You are sober, buckled. If you are driving, you are not on the cell phone. Again, just trying to do all the small things that we can to minimize contact with race soldiers, badge or no. That said, Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. No name calling. Real important. I know we've been under a lot of frustration and stress. Sometimes that can come out in anti-blackness and how we deal with other victims of racism. No name calling. One of the 10 stops. Very important. Context of White Supremacy signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim,
your
brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my condition. Mm-hmm. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.